Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! So past the hour, welcome to the program. It's Tuesday. It's the 10th day of June. It's 2008, of course. I'm Bob. I'm here, you're there. And I'm awfully glad about both. Sorry about last night, but, you know, I'm not lest I begin to sound like some grumpy old dude sitting on the in the rocking chair on the porch of the rest home, this thing in my neck is killing me. But I'm going to be here behind the microphone for the next 3 hours, then 2 hours with Peter Godbold. He's on his way. And glad to be back in the saddle himself. So, we're getting back to normal here at the Horn. Boy, am I glad. I'm just glad. So, bear with me. I'll try not to go, ow, every time I move my head or anything. So, we'll get through this. We'll get through this just fine. Now, where to start? I don't think it would be fair to go through this evening without making some mention and, in fact, sharing with you, if you have not already read them, Dennis Kucinich's articles of impeachment. It is clear to me that Dennis Kucinich has established himself beyond any shadow of a doubt as the bravest single member of the House of Representatives. He did that a long time ago in my book, but he has cemented that status with the articles of impeachment that he introduced yesterday evening against George W. Bush. And so we'll address that as well. But the business with the nuclear war and whether the nuclear ambitions and is it civilian or is it, you know, do they want a bomb? It's hard not to get a little bit queasy. And I know from queasy these days. When you read stuff in the Israeli press, like this, headlined, Olmert hints U.S. action on Iran nukes is near. I hate hinting. I hate intimating. You know, this is, we're talking about people's lives here. People who will be blown into a million pieces when George Bush and Ehud, at the urging of Ehud Olmert, begins raining death and destruction on the ordinary workaday people of Iran. I don't know what I'm going to do when that happens. I don't know how on earth I'm supposed to respond. When they start talking about, well, these were surgical strikes from the air, and we tried to minimize collateral damage. Minimize collateral damage. That means minimize the slaughter of innocents. And any time you have to minimize the, I'm not a pacifist. I'm just opposed to war, especially war that isn't justified. Iran hasn't attacked us. Iran hasn't attacked Israel. Iran has not left its borders. But they do have this urge to develop nuclear power. They say it's for civilian purposes. And, well, here's the story. Gil Ronan is the article's author, again, in the Israeli press, from Arutz Shiva, the Israel National News.com. He writes, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert hinted after his meeting with U.S. President George W. Bush this past Wednesday that U.S. action against Iran is imminent. Hinting. Again with the hinting. Let's see. The three syllables. Points to his ear. Sounds like. Oh, Jesus. Olmert did mention a timetable and said action would take place before Bush leaves the White House. And, of course, that was one of the things that Ray McGovern mentioned a month or so back when I was down in Institute, West Virginia, for his address to the Seneca 2 Forum. He mentioned the fact that the Israeli government has noted that their timetable has nothing to do with where Iran is in its civilian or military nuclear program, which they, of course, deny the military aspect, but rather the timetable is determined by the day when George Bush leaves office. And that's why the screws are being twisted so tightly, and that is why there is so much pressure being put on the Bush White House and so much saber-rattling going on. Because Bush has proven himself to be quite malleable. Olmert said, we reached agreement on the need to take care of the Iranian threat. Oh, God, they just take the English language out behind the barn and beat it to death, don't they? Take care of. You know, bandage. Care for. Nurture. No. To take care of the Iranian threat. When Olmert says take care of the Iranian threat, it's sort of the same thing as when the mafia don says, you need to go take care of this problem. I left, he said, with a lot less question marks regarding the means, the timetable restrictions, and America's resoluteness to deal with the problem. Now, that's the sound of me scratching my fuzzy little chin. I don't see where it's our problem. I don't see it's our problem in the least. If Israel wants to attack Iran and set off a complete bloodbath in that region, that's Israel's business. It's none of mine. But Olmert went on and said, George Bush understands the severity of the Iranian threat. In other words, he knows there isn't one, but they're going to gin up a war anyway. And the need to vanquish it, and intends to act on the matter before the end of his term in the White House. Did any of this information hit the evening news? I don't watch the evening news, so I rely on you to tell me. I mean, I just don't. Life is too precious, life is too short as it is. And wasting any time at all on Brian Williams or Charlie Gibson or cutesy Katie Couric is something I am simply not willing to do. With every day that goes by, we get closer to stopping the Iranian nuclear plan, Olmert said. He said that meaningful steps were being taken to handle Iran more effectively. And then he uses a phrase here that I find somehow particularly sickening coming out of the mouth of the elected leader of Israel. The Iranian problem requires urgent attention, and I see no reason to delay this just because there will be a new president in the White House 7.5 months from now. The Iranian problem. Well, goodness. Sounds to me like Prime Minister Olmert has a solution. One wonders if, in private, he calls it a final solution. Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And apparently, Ehud Olmert has not figured out that never again isn't an exclusive club. So there you are. We're 10 minutes into the program, and you already know that Ehud Olmert is hell-bent, and I mean that literally, on bombing a country that isn't doing anything. See, the Iranians are kind of in a pickle, because they're in the same corner that Saddam Hussein was in. You remember what happened to Saddam Hussein, don't you? The dictator for life, Iraq, sat around writing really, really bad poetry and even worse romance novels and aggrandizing himself at the expense of his people, but also maintained a balance of power in the region that kept Iran from getting too big for its britches, so to speak. In the course of keeping Iran at bay, he had to create the impression, if you will, that he was leaner, meaner, and tougher than what he was. And it was all for Iran's benefit, because there's a lot more Iranians than there are Iraqis. And so he did the saber-rattling thing. And if you recall, sometime around the fall of 2002, George Bush started saying, "He tried to kill my daddy." And as a consequence, the UN resolution was issued, and, you know, Colin Powell went there, "My friends, this is hard intelligence. This is not speculation." And then showed some dummied up photos that they'd gotten from a drunk guy under a bridge somewhere along the Euphrates River. And then the resolution called on Saddam Hussein to declare what he had, and George Bush ran around the country, "Saddam Hussein has got to disclose his weapons of mass destruction programs. He's got to come clean with the world." Okay. So Saddam Hussein complies. And he puts out a lot of documents that say, guys, I don't have any weapons of mass destruction. I don't have a nuclear program. I don't have a chemical weapons program. I don't have a biological weapons program. Come on in. Have a look. Look around. And so the UN sent its weapons inspectors in, all of whom said, be damned. Can't seem to find anything here. And George Bush's response was, that's because he's lying. We know he's got them. He's hiding them. That's what he's doing. He's hiding them somewhere. He is. That's it. He's hiding his weapons of mass destruction. And so, in March 2003, we initiated a reign of hell and death and destruction on Iraq. Because Saddam Hussein had disclosed the fact that he didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, and then we said, he's a liar. Well, that's where Iran is today. Iran constantly, do I get all mushy and misty-eyed about Iran? No. I have a sense of historical perspective for the entire region. I know what the region has been through all the way from the Levant to the Khyber Pass. It's not a pretty history, even though it is the essential history of the rise of human civilization. Yeah, we could talk for hours about the March of Alexander from Greece across the Hellespont through yada yada yada, the siege of Tyre, blah blah blah, the defeat of Persia and Xerxes. What was he? Xerxes the Third. We could do that, and we will if you want to. But the fact of the matter is, I have sympathy for anyone who says, okay, you want to know, we'll tell you. We've got a nuclear program. And the purpose of our nuclear program is to generate electricity. Because the only thing we have in the world to sell to the world is our oil. And we've got a lot of economic problems here. We have to subsidize our entire economy. And so, as a consequence, the more oil that we can put into the stream of commerce, the more money comes into the country. And if we've, if we're using our oil to generate our electricity, well, that's a lot less money that's coming into the treasury. So we want a nuclear program. But we don't want bombs. We're not working on bombs. Any thoughts we had of working on bombs, we stopped on. And the world generally agrees, except for Israel and the United States and George Bush. They're lying. And old Merritt says, yeah, they're lying. That's it. Bomb them. Bomb them now, George. Do what you're told. You know who I am? Yeah. Old Merritt reportedly told Bush, from a personal point of view, I must say that I admire the patience and the strong emotion that you show the state of Israel as a person of your stature. Israel loves you very much, and your wife, Laura. Ugh. Yeah, Israel loves Kofi, too. The U.S. is a leading element in dealing with Iran. You remember the Iranian solution? The Iranian problem. I'm sorry, that's what he called it, the Iranian problem. These are serious matters. I'm not just saying this. It is not good to publicize everything. So unless this is just some big charade to keep everybody on the edge of their seat waiting for the new TV season to begin next fall, these rotten bastards are hell-bent on starting a war with Iran. And it's hard to countenance that, and it's hard to feel good about it. It's hard not to feel sick about it. It's hard not to feel sick at the thought of shopkeepers, wives, mothers, children being blown to pieces over something that can't even be proven. It is sickening. And it looks like we're going to do it. The only question is when. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark. How are you?
What, did I conjure you?
You certainly did. Well, you know, I have some disagreement with you on this, though I certainly do not support an invasion of Iran, nor do I support a war with Iran. But I do think you're being a little too believing of the Iranian dictatorship. It is impossible for them to make energy cheaper through nuclear weapons than it is through oil. Absolutely impossible. So, I mean, that's the one thing that you've just got to know. There is no reason for them to have a civilian nuclear program. It is cheaper to do it through oil for them. Maybe not for France, but for Iran, it's cheaper through oil.
How is it cheaper?
Because they get oil out of the ground for like a dollar or two a barrel. And then they build a refinery, which is far, far cheaper than a nuclear weapons civilian nuclear facility. It's cheaper, it's easier to build, and it's so, you know, I don't support war with Iran either. I understand we disagree to some extent on this, but
let me
rational need for civilian nuclear energy.
Okay.
Let's that rational need.
Let's grant your argument on that. Let's say for an instant that putting more oil into the stream of commerce and having more money, you know, hard currency coming into the country, isn't the reason. Let's say that
it's a fungible thing, Bob. If it costs you $100 million to buy energy for Iran, okay, and it costs you through oil, and it costs you $200 million to do it through nuclear power, all right, then if you do it through nuclear power, you're down $100 million whether you sell it or not. You're always going to lose money. Even if you sold the oil, you get $100 million in, but you have to pay $200 million out to get the nuclear power. So it will never be better. It's the same reason why Brazil runs its fleet on sugarcane, because they got plentiful sugarcane.
Okay, so the same thing obviously applies to the Saudis. Why do the Saudis want nuclear power?
For the same reason the Iranians do, frankly, to combat Iran. I think they're afraid of Iran, and they also want to get it for military reasons. And the same with most of the Middle East, unfortunately. They've seen that Iraq, we walked in there because Saddam Hussein didn't have nukes, and they see that we suddenly respect North Korea because North Korea does have nukes.
Could it have anything to do with the fact that the Israelis have nukes pointed at them?
Partly. Note that they didn't try to build nuclear. Israel's had nuclear weapons probably since the 50s, certainly since the 60s. And they didn't have this nuclear arms race. I think Saudi Arabia is far more afraid of Iran than they are of Israel. And I think the Iran has ignited this arms race.
And so George Bush has said that he wants Saudi Arabia to have enriched uranium.
I'm as against as I am Iran having enriched uranium. It's ridiculous. I don't trust Saudi Arabia any more than I trust Iran. I know they're, quote, our ally, unquote. But, you know... I don't want any dictatorship to have nuclear weapons.
I'm not crazy about democracies having them either, Mark.
Well, I'm a little less concerned with democracies having them. I just don't think...
Ask the people in French Polynesia how they feel about having the French setting off undersea, underground nuclear explosions around them.
Well, that's true. That's true.
They're not real crazy about it, last I checked.
That's true. And the people of Japan probably aren't too crazy that we had them back in the 40s.
Let's continue on with this just for a moment then. You say that you're not in favor of a war with Iran. Good on you.
Right.
You're not in favor of an invasion of Iran.
Right.
That's two for you. What about an air-only bombing campaign, which seems to be what they've got in mind?
Only if intensive diplomacy fails, and not the kind that George Bush can do, because he can't. And I don't believe him, and I don't trust him. I do think Barack Obama, keeping a vague threat in the background, I don't think you can say we will never use military force, but I guarantee you Barack Obama would do a hefty negotiation. And I think this is a bargaining chip. I don't think Iran really needs these nuclear weapons or even wants them. I think they want to be part of the world community. They want the same kinds of things that North Korea wanted when they signed a deal with Bill Clinton, and they gave up their nuclear ambitions until, you know, George Bush wasn't looking and we didn't do the trust but verify.
What do you think of this quote from Olmert? Now, granted, the guy may be out of office and in striped pajamas before we know what happened.
I think he will be within a month or two. Really, I'm in real trouble for corruption.
But we don't get a kinder, gentler replacement either.
No, you might get worse. Netanyahu, I think, is to the right of Olmert, and there's a decent shot he'd win. I would hope Ehud Barak of the Labor Party would win, but. Israelis are getting bombed every single day. You know, they're getting missiles every single day, and they turn to the right generally when that happens.
But this quote from him, "The Iranian problem requires urgent attention, and I see no reason to delay this," and this is just creepy, "just because there will be a new president in the White House 7.5 months from now."
Yeah, well, it sounds like Israel thinks that they'd rather take action sooner rather than later.
But what is the urgency, Mark? I mean, everybody seems to be in agreement who actually knows anything about the situation on the ground in Iran that, you know, they're years and years and years away, a decade or more, from having enough to even think about making the first bomb.
That's not my understanding. Not a decade or more. It's hard to know exactly how much time it is. Clearly, it's not going to happen in a year or two. But I think a decade's pretty far off. I mean, listen, I can't say I know any more than the intelligence communities or Israel or Bush or Obama or anybody. I think Omer is, I mean, listen, you know, the article, I've been looking for it. I did find the article that you found. I haven't found it in a lot of other places that he's been that specific. But obviously he's hinting and trying to encourage Iran to back down. But as you say, I think Omer will be out of office in 2 months.
Well, the sad thing is there are a lot of people in the United States who, no, not a lot. Not, there are enough people high up in the United States government who think this would be a neat and groovy thing.
Everyone at that talk radio convention supported it, I assure you. Every single one.
Yeah, and but
not
you know,
that they represent America because they don't. But
right. What, is there a limit to this? I mean, you talk to these wing nuts, Mark. Is there a limit?
Right.
Nuclear bunker busters, are those okay? Because, you know, this isn't Osirak. This isn't 1980. Okay? It's not a nuclear program that is limited and set in one place. This is a spread.
That's what makes it much harder than either the Iraqi program or the Syrian one.
And as a consequence, you're going to have to, the bombing campaign is going to have to be huge, and it's going to have to involve some sort of munitions that will deep penetrate.
Clearly, the best answer is diplomacy. Clearly, it's the best answer. And no, I don't trust anyone in the Bush administration to do it. So I hope that we do nothing and we get an Obama president, and then I do think that Obama would have the right mixture of carrots and sticks to convince Iran to back down, because you got to get them to save face too. That's important. They have to be able to save face and make it a win-win for both of them, so that they can back down in a way that. But I know most Persian people don't want this. I know most Iranians don't want this. In fact, I'm not even certain. Well, I guess Khamenei must want it. The real guy in charge, because he wouldn't let Ahmadinejad talk so much if he didn't. But the great majority of Persians don't want this. And so if they see the threat coming, I would hope that they, with the right kind of diplomacy, would back down. And we should trade with Iran. I think most Iranians.
What have they got? What have they got that we want? Pistachios and rose water?
They got something called oil. You've heard of it.
Yeah, and they're doing quite well selling it to other people. You know, our Middle Eastern oil intake is only 15% of our imported oil, Mark. The vast majority of our so-called foreign oil comes from those vicious foreign countries, Mexico, Venezuela, and, you know, Canada.
Is it as low as 15%? That
yes.
Surprises me.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I thought it was more than that. But, of course, it's a world oil market, so it hardly matters. They sell it to Europe, and it's all one spot market.
I got an email that just rolled in. Selling oil for $140 plus a barrel will buy a lot of nuke power plants.
That's true.
Nuclear power plants can be more forever than oil. You pay for the nuke power almost once. And then a little P.S. Everybody else wants nukes because they need them to protect themselves from us and the Israelis in the region.
Well, no, that I believe. I do believe that they are doing it to protect themselves from the United States and possibly from Israel. But I don't believe they're doing it for civilian energy. That's the part I didn't buy.
But Mark, you've got the education.
Talk about solar.
How do you
a lot of heat?
Well, why is, you know, Saudi Arabia? Oh, we would like to have some may we have some enriched uranium, please, while you are kissing the ring, George Bush. No, why don't you turn that big stinking useless desert into a vast solar collector and sell energy to the world?
Exactly.
But no, they need it because somebody else has it, because somebody else has it, and it's pointed at them. You know, the Pakistanis hate the Iranians hate the Pakistanis hate the Indians hate the Pakistanis, and on, and nobody likes Israel, and Israel doesn't like anybody.
China got nukes because Russia got nukes, and then India got nukes because China got nukes, and then Pakistani got nukes because Pakistan got nukes because India got nukes, and that does tend to be how it goes.
Everybody wants into the party.
Yeah, and all it takes is one crazy dictator, and boom.
No, I'm not worried about the crazy dictators, because most crazy dictators are crazy like a fox.
Some are and some aren't.
You know, I don't think Musharraf is going to push the button anytime soon. He's busy surrendering to the Taliban right now.
I agree.
I agree, but
Musharraf could easily be replaced.
The minute, well, and it's not, yeah.
Then we're all in trouble.
It's when his head rolls and some fundamentalist cleric comes in and launches at Iran. Maybe Iran would want to have a deterrent threat against Pakistan. Because
Pakistan will launch at India long before it launches at Iran.
Yeah, it depends on what Iran, it depends on who they hate more. God knows there's no love lost between I always think of the little green Japanese paste you get at the sushi bar, the wasabi. No, the Wahhabist Sunnis, who have been proselytized out of Saudi Arabia and into Pakistan, hate the Iranians as much or more as they hate the Indians.
Well, that's true. If Al-Qaeda took over Pakistan,
you know, half of the ISI, the security forces in Pakistan, are controlled by Al-Qaeda sympathizers, although I hate to say Al-Qaeda because it's sort of loose and amorphous and is more Orwellian than anything.
I think Pakistan has enough trouble controlling itself. I mean, Pakistan is very, very close to civil war. It's a large country with lots of provinces that all don't agree with each other between the Baluchistanis and the Sunnis and the, I don't see Pakistan really beginning a war against anyone, except they always want Kashmir from India, and India has nuclear weapons, so they'll just sort of stay on the line of control there. I really think India and Pakistan are the ones to go after each other far more than either would go after any other country.
And there's India, who won't even sign the non-proliferation agreement, and George Bush went over and traded nuclear technology for mangoes. Remember that?
True, but India is a democracy and a stable democracy. I can't see India.
History,
ever
but history doesn't
the
speak.
First to use nuclear weapons.
History doesn't speak that well of democracies in many instances. You'll recall from your reading of Plato that both he and Socrates, Plato in particular, bore no love for the Athenian democracy, because they killed Socrates. The democracy did. You know, the mob.
That's true.
The Kratos of the Demos, the voice of the people. For corrupting the youth. There's nothing special about democracy that makes it more trustworthy than, say, a monarchy or an autocracy, an oligarchy.
I think there is. I think a democracy is less likely to begin an aggressive war. Of course, we did.
I was going to say, you want to revisit that one, Mark?
Bush wasn't elected. But no, we've done it. That's true.
Only one country has nuked another country on this planet. A democracy did it.
That's true.
You know, we started the nuclear arms race. We let the nuclear genie out of the bottle. A question for you, Mark. Do you think a Muslim nation would nuke the Dome of the Rock? Or where the Dome of the Rock was? Is?
Not sure. I mean, it depends on, nuclear weapons, they might not nuke Jerusalem. They might nuke Tel Aviv. I could see someone, particularly someone who's a fundamentalist.
Yeah, but this is a state the size of New Jersey. The fallout's going to blow over Jerusalem.
Well, that's true. That's true. I don't know that it would. It might kill everyone in Jerusalem, but whether it would actually blow down the mosque when it's Tel Aviv's about 50 miles away, 60 miles away, I don't know. I guess it depends on the size of the kilotonnage.
And finally, just the persistent question that I keep asking, Mark. On the day that Iran gets a nuclear weapon, assuming that they do, and I don't concede the point, what happens then? Israel with 250 says, "Oh, we're scared of you now. Oh, well, we've got to deal with you differently now."
Israel and Iran are already at war. They're at war in Lebanon. They're at war in Gaza. The reason why Iran took over Lebanon is to say that Iran hasn't gone outside its borders, it clearly has. It just took over Lebanon using its proxy, Hezbollah. The sad thing is that if we hadn't taken out Saddam Hussein...
Is Hezbollah comprised of Iranians or Lebanese?
Hezbollah is comprised of Shia from all, some are native, some are not, and they are armed and funded by Iran.
Sort of like we armed and funded the Contras.
Yes, very similarly, in fact. Very similar to the Contras, in the sense that most of them are native, but they do not represent the majority. But when you arm and fund them, they have a lot of power.
Kind of like we armed and supported the death squads in El Salvador.
That's correct. That is another good analogy.
Sort of like we arm and support the supported the death squads in Colombia. Argentina.
To the Colombia,
Chile,
different.
The Philippines.
Philippines is a better example. Of course, they were supporting the governments. That just makes it a little different, but not much.
I don't think the calling card that the death squad leaves when they're done matters much to the court.
Yeah.
What bugs the hell out of me is, looks like we're going to get ourselves a little cooking hot war with Iran. John Bolton. See, I always confuse him with Michael Bolton, and I can't remember whether it's a frizzy-headed singer or a guy with a porn mustache. John Bolton was on Tom Hartman's program.
Yeah.
Why Tom Hartman would want to give that right-wing piece of filth any of the limited time that a liberal has to talk, I don't know.
Well, I would hope Tom grilled him, but I doubt it.
But he said, well, you know, it's not like we've got to invade Iran. We can do this all with aircraft. Definitely do it with bombs. Definitely.
The problem is that George Bush can't be trusted. I mean, that's the problem. That I don't trust this administration to do anything right. And it is.
Well, is there a right way to do
negotiation? Yes, there is.
Is there a right way to start a war with Iran?
No, there's a right way to use diplomacy. Look at what Clinton did with North Korea. Now, we were never going to invade North Korea, and everybody knew it. We didn't have the troops in South Korea. We were not going to nuke North Korea, but Clinton made a deal with them, carrots and sticks, and it worked for 8 years until, you know, George Bush took his eye off the ball and North Korea took advantage of it.
Is there nobody paying attention in Washington in the halls of power? I mean, is that what the shakeup in the Air Force was about a couple of days ago? Looking for somebody that would be willing to push the button, you know, send the flyboys into the air and not object. And you know, Admiral Fallon disappeared for the same reasons.
I think you'll find that in Congress and in the American people and around the world, in Europe and so forth, everyone is looking to the post-Bush era. Everyone is following very closely Obama and McCain, and no one's watching this White House. I mean, really, it's almost like it's already January 20, 2009, and of course it's not. And this president is very much in power, and he's very much in power for at least 6 months, make that seven. And it's really, I think that most of America has already moved on. He has an approval rating in the 20s, and yet you're absolutely right, Bob. He has tremendous power, and while you and I disagree a bit, I do think we should try to encourage Iran not to have nuclear weapons. I do think we should use diplomacy. I'm sure you and I agree that...
Well, aren't we still sitting on just a boatload of Iranian cash that we haven't released?
Just a little bit.
Assets frozen.
There are carrots, yes, that's the point. There's not just sticks. There are carrots we can do. You know, Iran has been sanctioned by the Security Council. Europe has joined in with us to sanction them to not use nuclear weapons. Now, like the Iraqi sanctions, you know, sometimes they're honored more in the breach. But there are non-military sticks, and there's plenty of non-military carrots. And I know that the majority of Iranian people are not anti-American. I mean, it would be different and more difficult with some other countries on Earth, frankly.
Mark, would the Israelis be beating the drum this hard and this loud if they didn't have the Bush administration behind them willing to use American muscle?
Probably not.
So really, the critical day is January 20th, 2009, isn't it?
I think so. And what they really want is to get Iran to back down. And Iran is...
Well, this doesn't sound like back down. When you've got the Prime Minister of Israel talking about the Iranian problem, and, boy, that really is just,
you know,
sickeningly
well, we don't
disturbing
know
to me.
Specifics. I mean, as we do know, Syria had it was actually a very complex operation. If you read the reports about it, very little of it was above ground. Most of it was underground. They used all kinds of ways to hide what they did. That we actually saw many of them in satellite after the bombing when they tried to remove all of it. I don't know the details of it. I would hope that if there is something, it is very much contained. I know this: Israel does not want war with Iran. That is a certainty.
They don't?
And no, they don't want Iran to.
Then what was Olmert doing over here begging for it?
You know, they don't want war with Iran, just like they didn't want war with Syria. They don't want Iran or Iraq or Syria to be nuclear powers.
So they want to be able to just go bomb Iran and have Iran take it.
Well, they did it with Iraq and Syria successfully in 81, and just.
But we didn't have a bunch of the troops on the ground in Iraq that could be. See, that's what I keep thinking.
No doubt Iran is much, much, much more difficult.
I'm thinking if I'm Iran, and I mean, I don't, you know, and then this is not a sympathy thing. This is just pure, you know, strategery. The kind of, you know, they
geopolitics.
Yeah, they ran a military war game, I guess 6 months, 9 months, a year ago. And the bad, you know how it is with war games. You know, there's a red team and a blue team, and the blue team was, or whatever, one side was strategizing as Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And we attacked Iran.
And they went after our troops.
And he beat our ass. And they called the war game off and changed the rules.
Well, the problem is that the majority of Iraq, of course, is Shia. And many of the Shia are sympathetic to Iran.
I'm thinking if I'm running the show in Iran, militarily speaking, the minute the bombs start falling, I send about a half a million Iranian soldiers across the Iraqi borders and just gut stomp the American troops there. Because we're not set up to handle that. Even
the
a little bit.
The irony is that Saddam Hussein was. I mean, Iran and Iraq fought to a stalemate. They fought years and years, a million people died, and it ended up a stalemate.
And see, the Iraqi military was, oh, pardon, excuse me, are we in the way? Here, let me get out of the way here. There he is. Go get him. There he is.
That's another good reason to get our troops out of there as soon as possible.
Yeah, but I mean, doesn't that make perfectly good sense? You know, maybe sink a couple of carriers right in the neck of the Straits of Hormuz so nothing gets in and nothing gets out?
Well, except that at the end of the day, Iran doesn't want a larger war with the United States either, right? I mean, it's all about game theory, right? It's all about worrying about other people's threats. I mean, the thing is that the mullahs of Iran, they don't want war with the United States. They really don't, the current mullahs. I mean, Ahmadinejad might, but,
so they but he's not a mullah, he's an engineer, so... Yeah.
Right, that's right, he's a figurehead. And the people of Iran certainly don't want war.
And what happens, say, the bombs start falling... And say, you know, troops start pouring across from Pakistan or from Afghanistan into Iran. I mean, it has.
I don't even want to go and think about that.
It has. Look, Mark, it has all the makings of August 1914. And you know, we're going to protect you, and we've got a treaty with you, and blah 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 blah. And the next thing you know, you got people in trenches and dying in waves.
There's no question the best option is diplomacy. The problem is that Bush doesn't know how to do it.
I don't think it's not that he doesn't know how. He don't wanna.
Well, he's never tried.
He doesn't. He wants to be the sheriff. Okay. I mean, this goes back to September 11th when he said, "I've got." There's an old saying in Texas: "It wanted dead or alive."
Right.
3 months later, he's saying, "Well, you know, I don't think that much about Osama bin Laden." And it's all tough guy, macho, butch posing, if it weren't for the fact that he controls such a humongous arsenal, you would say that he's straight out of Shakespeare. He's full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. But he does control all this, and we've got a military that has been poisoned by the religious right, especially the Air Force. And we've got the makings here of a perfect storm, Mark. And I don't even know if the Israelis know what they're getting ready to unleash. With all this drum beating and all this begging for war and talking about Iranian problems and solutions and crap like that.
I think it's a bluff, but you know, I don't know. It's all pretty scary, that's for sure.
And you know, this, like I said, I keep coming back to this. Just because there will be a new president in the White House 7.5 months from now is no reason we can't bomb Iran now.
Well, I fear that there are definitely people in the Bush administration that think that.
And the problem is, though,
when Ehud Olmert
says, when we bomb Iran, what he means is when you bomb Iran. Hell, they're not even going to pay for it. I mean, we're, you know, we're being used like a prostitute. We at least ought to bill like one. I mean, we're carrying
never,
somebody.
We never charged them. We barely charged Kuwait and Saudi Arabia for the Persian Gulf War.
Right. We're yeah. Well, and who started that one? George Bush. You know, you remember the April Glaspie memo.
Yes, I do. We don't charge Germany and Japan for helping them either, and their economies are getting better than ours.
No, we rebuilt it because we saw what happened out of the Versailles Treaty.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, today, we still spend hundreds of billions of dollars in NATO. I'm not talking about the Marshall Plan, which I think was a great idea. I'm talking about today. Today, Japan could afford to pay us for us defending them from China. Today, Germany, I don't even know why we have troops in Germany. Germany's under no threat today. The Soviet Union's gone.
They've got a perfectly lovely Luftwaffe. They've got a nice little Wehrmacht. Yeah.
Exactly. I don't understand why we have troops in Europe at all. Japan, at least, is still under, some threat from China.
Well, I think there's an inherent bigotry against the Germans, Mark. We take this.
Troops in Italy, though. Why do we have troops in Italy? Come on.
Well.
What are we worried about?
Spain, Rota Spain, great big naval base. We got the Navy in Naples.
Yeah, you're right.
Well,
that's because we
like to treat the Mediterranean like the Romans did. You know, the Romans didn't call the Mediterranean the Mediterranean. They called it Mare Nostrum, our sea.
Our lake.
Our sea, yes.
Our sea.
And so we want the world is our oyster. And I don't know. Every day I get up and I want, and I, honest to God, I should probably seek help. Every day I get up and I think, is this the day they do it?
I think they have to build the American people up. They have to at least try to sell it to us the way they tried to sell us in Iraq. I can't see it happening tomorrow. I guess that's, again, where I disagree with you. I think that when Bush starts giving us a lot of rhetoric, that's when we need to duck and cover. You can't sell a new war in August, maybe September.
No, we started a little poll. I guess it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. We started a little poll, Mark, for when does George do it? And I've got second week of December.
Yeah, after the election. It makes more sense after the election.
Before
that's,
Christmas,
that's really the scary time,
after the
you're
election.
Right. November 4th to January.
You see, John Conyers said in no uncertain terms, if he bombs Iran without coming to the Congress first, we will begin impeachment proceedings.
Right, but it won't. He won't have time.
Right, because they're not smart enough to go and read Cicero's prosecution of Varus, I think it was.
It's very, very hard to impeach a president, if he does something on December 5th. There's no time. Christmas is coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Impeach a president. Lord help us all.
But you're welcome to get in on the pool.
November 10th.
I think ELO, our moderator in the chat room, is keeping tabs on who's got what dates. But you're free to join the pool.
I abstain.
I mean, there's no big prize. I think we might be able to scrounge up a Head On Radio Network coffee mug for the winner or something.
I don't
like
want to bet on such things. I really hope we don't do that. I hope Israel doesn't do it. I hope we don't do it. I hope Iran sees the saber rattling and backs down, but we have to give them a face-saving way to do it. And I do think that a sophisticated president could do that. I mean,
if Israel's fingerprints are at all on this, and if we do it, and their fingerprints are on it at all, what can Iran do to Israel? They don't have a nuclear weapon. They can't.
They're already attacking Israel. I mean, they already have Hezbollah on the northern border and Hamas on the southern border.
Yeah, but
and
they don't. That's
we
not
just
an.
Gives them all
that's,
their arms.
That's
no,
that's
Iran,
that's
arms training.
That's gnats and mosquitoes. Long. That's not an invasion force. Hezbollah can't take a city and hold it. Hezbollah doesn't have tanks. Hezbollah doesn't have troop carriers. Hezbollah doesn't have an air force.
No, but they can kill thousands of people. You're right. They could only pretty much kill civilians, kidnap soldiers. They can't hold territory. That's true. Although, I don't know, they kind of held it in Iran, in Lebanon.
But it was Lebanon, not Israel.
Well, that's true.
Wasn't Israel's to not hold.
That's true.
I mean,
they're already shooting missiles into Israeli cities. It's even more than they used to just shoot them into towns like Sde'erot. Now they can go as far as Ashkelon. you know, next city up from Ashkelon would be Tel Aviv. If they hit Tel Aviv, I mean, they're already hitting Haifa, the third largest city. That could get ugly. That's what would happen. It'd be a missile campaign. And I wouldn't be surprised if they have some chemical weapons, though I'd be the first to tell you chemical weapons are not nuclear weapons. I wouldn't even call them weapons.
Well, chemical weapons are stupid from a tactical standpoint. One change in the wind and, you know, your people die.
Except Iran's pretty far away, and I don't think they give
them. Yeah, but if you're saying that Hezbollah might use them or Hamas or something like that.
No, that's true. That's true. It would hurt Hezbollah. But, you know, I don't think they give a damn about the Palestinian Arabs at all and wouldn't mind killing a few of them. I don't think Iran cares at all if they die, too. No, so, it could get really ugly. No question about it, Bob. No question about it. And I just wish we had
And it all could have been remedied if we would have impeached the little bastard 2 years ago, but thanks, Nancy Pelosi, it's off the table.
Bob, we didn't have the popular support.
We didn't try to build it either, did we?
That's true. You're right about that.
You know, they didn't have the popular support for impeaching Bill Clinton either. They did it anyway.
That's true, but then they lost a bunch of elections.
No, they didn't. That was
they lost 98.
Really? There was a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives in 1998.
They lost seats. In every presidential year, in the sixth year of an 8-year presidential reign, going back I don't know how far, probably the entire 20th century, the president's party has lost seats, except for 1998. That's the only example, and most people think because America was fed up with impeachment. Look, you know I support impeaching the president. You know I think it's constitutionally right. You know I think that
yeah, I do. But Mark, to be quite honest with you, I think it is deleterious to the effort when you say that we're licked coming out of the gate. You know, the people weren't behind it. The people never had it told. The people never had it brought to their attention. You know, they giggled at Kucinich over it when Kucinich, lo and behold, for yes again the 100 out of 100 times the guy's been right. But he just happens to be short and right. You know, it pisses me off. The guy was right about Iraq. He was right about health care. There's nothing this guy was wrong about. And he was right about impeaching Dick Cheney 2 years ago.
Right. And that's always it. Where we should have started.
And you know, but did anybody get behind him? Did anybody try to? No. They loved
the feeling was, you know what I'm going to say, Bob. The feeling was that even if we successfully impeached, which I'm not so sure we could have, I don't think we had the votes for it, but even if we did, we definitely didn't have 2/3 in the Senate. The effort would have lost, and the idea is the Democrats would have been seen the same way the Republicans were seen in the 90s as just going for partisan reasons, even though it's not true, even though this is a lawless president.
Yeah, well, this is a Democratic Congress that is afraid to succeed.
That's true.
I mean, I'm looking at another story here, completely off topic, but I'm just sick to death, Mark, of reading the phrase, Democrats failed.
Yeah, or back down or kick in.
AP reporting, Senate Republicans blocked a plan to tax the windfall profits of the largest oil companies. Democrats today failed, 51-43, to get the 60 votes needed to overcome a GOP filibuster. You know,
wait, but that's not their fault.
No, they just failed. Democrats failed.
Okay, but they can't beat a filibuster. Now, I do think we have a great shot, really good shot, of getting some 58 senators. Even 60 is not out of reach, although I don't think it's likely. But of getting, if we have 58, we can get two senators for, I mean, Hagel's against the war.
Maybe get Lieberman.
On Lieberman anymore. I mean, we can actually make major, major gains in 2008. And I think most Democrats see that around the corner, and they say, you know what, We're going to bunker down and hope that nothing horrible happens in 7 months, and then we can be free. And I think that is the general feeling. It's the feeling in Congress. It's the feeling in Europe. Let's just wait out the clock and hope Bush doesn't bomb anything in the next 7 months. And
that's not anything that I'm willing to put money on. I mean, I'll buy a damn a Powerball ticket for a buck. I wouldn't put a buck on that.
Well,
they're
hoping for.
We've got dangerous and crazy in the White House, and we've got a Congress that's sitting there thinking, you know, we can have more power. More power, definitely more power. What the hell are they going to do with more power? They're not using the power they got. I mean, I'm a Democrat. Yeah, imagine how it galls me to say this kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of people who busted their ass in 2006, Mark. you know, to get a Democratic majority on the expectation that the war, among other things, and the occupation, you know, calling it a war is kind of cheap now, it's an occupation, that the occupation would be brought to an end. And a lot of people campaigned on that. And then they got in, the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi took power and said, "Nah, screw it. We got power."
Well, no, wait a minute. They did try. They didn't use the sledgehammer. But they did pass several resolutions that would have brought our troops home. And the president vetoed it. Now, what they didn't do, and I've talked about frequently, is that they didn't stop funding the war effort.
Right. That's where you pull up and you say, you know, you've got to fund the war. Well, damn it, George, we sent you a bill that funded the war and you vetoed it. That's not our problem now. And again, it's another case of the same thing you were talking about with impeachment. They didn't try.
Well, that's right.
You know, there's an old Latin proverb.
The American people would turn against them.
There's an old Latin proverb that says, for fear of failing, he sat still.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's what they're doing. You know, we're just gonna hunker down. We're gonna sit still. We're gonna go over here in the corner and suck our thumbs until November 2008 and hope we get a few more seats.
Charlie Rangel called it Stockholm syndrome.
Charlie Rangel's right.
I think he is right.
Of course,
for those that don't know, is the idea that when you're kidnapped by bad people, that eventually
you begin to identify with them. It's Patty Hearst and the Symbionese Liberation Army.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was right too, because you know, you brought it up in the show in the last hour. The Democrats haven't been tax and spend big government liberals for 40 years. And they're still beating us up with it, and virtually every Democratic member of the Congress, and every Democratic member of the House, and every Democratic member of the Senate lives in mortal fear that some little pissant editor somewhere in left elbow Alabama is going to call him a liberal.
And part of the reason is because we don't have talk radio, because we don't have the outlets that the right wing has, because we don't have Rupert Murdoch controlling 35%, we don't have George Soros, say, on the other side, or anyone else of that ilk, because Democrats are not putting money in media, because Bob are not on Air America or something much, much better. You're absolutely right. With media comes power, and for all the money that Obama's getting, it's funny, it's amazing. He's pulling people out of the woodwork. He has 1.5 million people gave to his campaign, far more than any other campaign, because people are dying for something, and he's the only one out there speaking these principles, because we don't have any media. I mean, what are we talking about? The Nation? Mother Jones? I mean, these are tiny little media outlets.
You're gonna love this, Mark, because, you know, I read a lot of stories and I love the work they do at Alternet. Do you ever see their stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like their work too.
So I get this, blast email from Don Hazen, who is the executive editor. He's the guy who started Alternet. You know, done a hell of a job. Dear Bob, did you know that America's top 5 commercial radio station owners broadcast? And see, when I get one of these, Mark, I just go.
Did I know? I've devoted my life to fighting it.
Yeah. Did you know that America's top 5 commercial radio station owners broadcast more than 2,570 hours of conservative news and talk every weekday? In our age of shameful shock jock spewing hate talk, we need to support the progressive radio alternative, where facts are a crucial part of the story.
Yeah, how come Alternet's not advertising the head on radio?
Wait. This is a Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. If you order the Ginsu now, we'll send you this lovely tomato pourer. It's paragraph 2. Our friends at Air America Radio are breaking new ground and hot news stories.
They so aren't.
They have some of Alternet's most popular writers and media figures on their team. Rachel Maddow, Tom Hartman, Laura Flanders, and others. And now you can listen to them anytime you'd like to on the web for free. Give them a try. Demand more from your radio dial. 4 years ago, Air America made history by becoming the country's first all-progressive mass media outlet, featuring progressive news, opinion, and exclusive guests like Howard Zinn, Howard Dean, Arianna Huffington, Eddie Vedder, Desmond Tutu, and more. Now we've made it easier than ever for you to listen on the web and totally free. We call it Air America On Demand. What the hell? They haven't had a stream before now?
I guess not.
Well, I know for a damn fact they have. You can hear news-breaking interviews, insightful liberal commentary, or even hilarious right-wing callers. It's easy, it's free, and it's opinion and news you can hear nowhere else. Click here now to listen to our latest on-demand audio.
Yeah, and of course, Air America, they don't know.
But it's all a dodge.
They don't.
The link at the bottom. Try a 2-week free trial membership here.
Ah. And then they have you pay.
Then you pay.
Okay. All right. I knew there was something somewhere.
See, this is why we struggle from day to day. Okay. This is why you know you're sitting here. Sort of wondering, you know, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? And we go from month to month in a hole and sit here and do everything short of eat dirt to keep the lights on.
And the worst part is
because we give the programming away. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of listeners every month, Mark, listen to the Head On Radio Network. You know how many contributors we have?
100?
I wish.
We don't have 100?
We don't have 100.
50?
Keep trying.
We gotta have 50.
Keep trying.
We gotta have 50, Bob.
Nope.
30.
You're about there.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah, it is. And
America will die soon because they can't fund their model.
Well, but hey, look, they just hired, what's his name, Ron Kuby, to fill Randy Rhodes' slot. You know, here's a guy from New York, you know, up Easter, and they're going to syndicate him to that radio station in Busted Knuckle, Alabama. Because, you know,
Busted Knuckle, Alabama will listen to Air America, for sure.
Well, no. I mean, there are places that liberal radio takes off in the South. I mean, you make it go in Birmingham. You can make it go in Nashville, your hometown. Yeah,
that's true. Well, Nashville's majority Democratic. I was talking about Busted Knuckle.
But that's the whole point. Why would a guy programming Busted Knuckle Radio bring in a guy who comes, you know, that's the problem with the Southern racists? Yeah, because that's going to work. Morons. You know? Morons.
We've got longer fields, and I don't want to hijack.
No, that's okay. I always enjoy our conversations, and we haven't done this in a while, Mark. You've probably got stuff to do.
That's true. I always enjoy conversations with you, and we always have good radio together. I do fear something's going to happen. I do think Omer is saber-rattling. For the same reason Ahmadinejad is, frankly, that they're both fearful of their own public. The difference is that Omer, in a democracy, I just don't think he'll be in office in 2 or 3 months. So hopefully he doesn't bomb Iran on the way out.
Yeah, and hopefully the Israeli people are sane enough not to put Benjamin Netanyahu back in power.
So that's the fear. Although Barack is running again, and I think he'd be good. Ehud Barak, of course, was the one that made the Camp David offer. He's a rational person.
Hey, that reminds me of something. We put up with all this crap, this viral business over the internet about Obama being a closet Muslim. The guy's first name's Barak. Why aren't we accusing him of being a closet Jew?
There you go. You should.
I mean, but no, that's not out there.
Barak, by the way, just so you know, in Hebrew, comes from the root Baruch, which means blessed.
Yes, I know. That much I do know.
Okay, well, it's the same root in Arabic and in Hebrew.
Because they're all the same. They all come from the same Nilo-Saharan, Northern African language family.
They have the same language roots.
Yeah.
They have the same language roots.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's what it means. Blessed, yes. Obama. And I don't know what Obama means.
It's probably like the Kenyan equivalent of Jones.
Probably.
Nobody knows what Jones means either. Except for me, who is wildly jonesing to eat a salad with oil and vinegar on it now that I'm starving to death. But apart from that, no, nobody knows what Jones means.
It's all good for you, Bob. Take it and enjoy it.
Yeah, I'll try. Mark, take it easy, brother.
Thank you. You take care.
That was a fun one. Thanks. Bye.
It was.
You know, can you imagine turning Mark Levine and me loose on a national radio audience? Lord God, it'd have to be a 6-hour show. And I don't know if we could even be in the studio together too long, because sooner or later I'd have to mug him and duct tape his mouth to get a word in edgewise. Love him to death. I'm playing, of course. You know that. Let's see what we got.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's...
Hey, Bob.
Hey, hey.
This is Albert.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. What's up, brother?
Yeah, you know, I was tripping out yesterday. I took some mushrooms, and I heard the repeat, and I figured that was a repeat, but then I hear all these articles of impeachment being read by Dennis Kucinich. And then I really was just, really just, no, she's okay. So, you know, and I'll tell you, hearing all that just put a nice little warm ray of sunshine in my life, I think. Because now the action can begin. No.
Well, it kind of sort of could. If we had the stomach for the fight.
We're going to have to, because, you know, I mean, I know how Mark was talking about how he doesn't trust Bush. Well, I certainly, you know how much I trust the man.
Yeah,
I don't trust Israel.
Well, I don't. Well, and you know, that's the thing. I think Mark, as loath as Mark would be to say that, I think Mark has a little bit of distrust, too. He hopes that Olmert is saber-rattling, but I don't think Mark was willing to say that he was certain that he was. And I don't think there's any grounds to think to be certain that it's saber-rattling. I mean...
No, you see,
Israel has what, the third, fourth largest military in the world? Fifth, maybe, sixth?
It sounds to me like not so much saber-rattling. It sounds like what I want for Christmas is...
Well, yeah, because, see, we start the war with Iran. Iran does something negative toward Israel. Israel gets an excuse to cross into Lebanon, go in and slaughter every living thing in Gaza, you know, and just solve all of its problems.
See, and that's my fear. See, that's what I fear, because if you're going to sit there and you're really going to play the game of geopolitics, I mean, the reason that they're always talking about an end game for Iran, see, this is the kind of, you know, I've got to watch my language because, you know, I let him fly. But I'm just going to say, you know, it was okay for the Shah of Iran to build nuclear reactors. Okay, I mean, I have the advertisements from 1970 or 60, what have you, National Geographic, saying, guess who's building nuclear power plants? That's right, the Shah of Iran. This is from memory. The Shah of Iran is sitting on top of one of the world's largest oil reserves, but he knows that one day it's going to run out. And when it does, the nuclear power, la 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 la, it's clean, it's beautiful. Brought to you by the Boston Nuclear Agency, the New York, all of them.
Yeah, and you know, and you know what? Way back when it was the Shah sitting on the peacock throne. Yes, it was called the peacock throne.
Mm-hmm.
Israel wasn't nervous about it either.
Oh, why would they be?
Because they were buddies.
See, and this is the whole thing, and this is what, you know, you guys are really hitting a great thread on the ugliness underneath the sheets of a democracy. You know, man, let Iran have nuclear weapons. Let them have it. What
you know,
do?
I mean, I know this violates Albert. It violates Godwin's law, even though it's radio. I still try to apply it. But the fact of the matter is, at the time that he took power, Germany was a democracy.
That was my example.
At the time that the warlords took power, Japan had the Diet.
Yes.
You know, a parliamentary body.
Exactly.
Which is democratic in nature.
Yes.
The one thing that in many historical instances, the one thing that democracies are good at is falling apart in the face of a strong man. You know, we've stopped. You're kind of sort of halfway there. Well, I've got listeners who still say ain't going to be no election in November.
Oh well, yeah.
And by that not meaning they're going to cancel the elections necessarily, but whatever passes for an election ain't going to be an election. And you know what? There's reason to sit and think about that very seriously. For instance, with the electronic voting machines. It's not just the hackable machines.
Mm-hmm.
Take a moment and think about what we now know about the complicity of the telecoms in domestic spying.
Exactly.
All right. How is the data transmitted from one polling place to another, or how is the data transmitted from the tabulator at the county seat to the state capitol? It's over a Not over a dusty road with a guy in a saddlebag and a horse. It's over a phone line.
Exactly. It would be more secure through the air. It would be more secure with a guy with a horse.
You know, you just kind of intercept it. Oh, look, now this needs flipped. And then on it goes, and no one's the wiser. And we can't find out because people like Jay Rockefeller want to give immunity to the telecoms to make sure that they can't be sued.
Well,
this is like a bone in my throat talking about Democrats this way. But you know what? Our telecom immunity problem isn't with Republicans. Our telecom immunity problem is with Democrats like Sylvester Reyes, who now says, the telecom immunity looks okay to him in the House. He's, you know, chairman of House Intelligence. And Jay, who thinks that, you know, sue the poor little telecoms, it just breaks me up.
Right. Yeah. But this is what we have to do. You know, here I go again, but, you know, we talk about Barack Obama and him being president and how that whole thing was just representative of change. And look what he's done already. He's not taking money from lobbyists. The DNC can't take money from lobbyists. I mean, and this whole thing is, you know, it's almost, it's a beautiful little plan. Like, you know, when the Atreides, you know, exposed the spice traders and, you know, the Harkonian spies all came out of the woodwork. And the emperor's spy. I mean, this is the kinds of things we need to do. And we really, let's Lieberman them all. Make them go away. Enough of this stuff. I understand that there's going to be more conservative Democrats and there's going to be more liberal Democrats. However, just because you're more conservative doesn't give you the right or the blank check to act like a Republican and be a total criminal. You see, and this is where, you know, like, you know, they were talking about this on Randy Rhodes earlier. You know, oh, well, you know, Rahm Emanuel and Nancy Pelosi, they all knew all these charges. They knew because the White House briefed them, and it was kind of like, you know, poison the well. However, with their corruption, you know what I'm saying? You know, like catch them in bed with a couple of hookers, get some pictures of it, you know, like old CIA tricks, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I sat, during my weekend, I sat and watched, and granted, it's highly fictionalized, but I watched Charlie Wilson's War.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about old CIA tricks and stuff. It was a fun movie. Julia Roberts and Tom Cruise and
it's not totally Tom Hanks. Anyway, not Cruise.
No, yeah, Tom Hanks. Yeah, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise. Yeah. but of course, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman steals the show.
Yeah.
Of course,
he's a great actor.
Any movie you put him in, he's going to do that. But there's a beautiful scene where he brings Tom Hanks a bottle of Talisker Scotch. Fine Scott, and comes in and is telling Tom Cruise about or Tom Hanks about what Tom Hanks was talking with his secretaries about. He goes, "You were listening through the door? That's a thick door." He goes, "No. I bugged the Scotch bottle. We're the CIA. We do that."
Mm-hmm.
But the dirty tricks. I watched Matt Damon in The Good Shepherd, which was I love spy movies.
That was a good one.
Oh, it was a very good one. And, you know, there's the photographs of him with the lover from college that he hooks up with for a one-night stand. And, you know, boom, there's the pictures. Yeah,
yep.
Sure.
Awesome.
Do you think Elliot Spitzer just happened? Elliot Spitzer didn't just happen. I mean, here's a guy who comes into office and looks at his political opponents and says, "I am an effing steamroller."
Mm-hmm.
You know what? They're going to find a way to, you know, put a little pinprick in that balloon.
You see, but this is where it is. This is the dead wood. I don't care if it's Democrat. This is why people, you see, and it's people that are in that groove, okay, that are in that clique, okay, and these people have been pulling power, and look at the DLC. You got all the Republican organizations, and you got all these people, and they're all in the same groups. They're all in the same cliques. They don't really even disagree with each other. I mean, and if they do, it's about the most passile, just surface kind of crap. You know, they don't have any emotion. They don't really care because they know they're going to turn around and drink martinis with all these guys later that night. You see, but it's time for us, as people, to cut this wood off. You know, this is why these people call, you know, the left and the right end of the spectrum, they call it this false paradigm. And they call it this whole aspect that it's two wings of the same bird. And it really certainly is, because you look at, you know, the bone structure of these Nancy Pelosi's and all these people that are just...
Well, it may be the same bird, but Nancy Pelosi's not part of the spine, I can tell you that.
Well, no, but...
she might be that gelatinous thing that hangs below the chicken's beak, or, you know...
Exactly. But look at Dianne Feinstein. Her husband's making, you know, her car.
Well, but at least she, you know, but she's behaving true to form. I expect Dianne Feinstein to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, after all, you know, they're making a fortune on this.
Yeah. This has to go. All that stuff has to go. It has to go bye-bye. We have to say goodbye to all these people.
But how do you do that? I mean, how do you eliminate? I mean, you can't constitutionally. You can't create a law that says no one with a stock portfolio can run for Congress.
No, true. But at the same time, you could pass a law to say that nobody may. You know, once you are in Congress, there's nothing. You know. In a sense, your assets should be frozen. Dick Cheney shouldn't be able to be making energy policies and giving no-bid contracts to Halliburton when he owns... I mean, that's so ethically depraved of any... Oh, that's disgusting. I mean, but real quick, yeah, you girls like that. That is disgusting. Dick Cheney's a bad word of mine. Dick Cheney's the second word that my dog needs to hear before he attacks. It's Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld. I say those things in three things and... Say goodbye to your crotch. That's my dog. But anyhow, when we sit in here looking at these people doing this garbage, I mean, this is garbage, Bob. We can't be nimby-pimby, namby-pamby about this.
No, this is not. No, this is not a nuanced discussion at this point.
Exactly. This is like, hey, listen, you know, great, grand, wonderful. You made your money. Time to get off the bus. It's not your turn anymore. You've lost your right. In a sense, when George W. Bush and his whole administration is impeached, well, if some of the Democrat leaders have to go, they have to go. Guess what? We can put new ones in office. What are we worried about? It's the voters that care. And you know what? If they say, you know what, that son of a bitch was corrupt, we're glad they're gone. Because this is the kind of world that we need to be around.
But, you know, it gets terribly complicated when you get into the chess match and you're trying to think five moves out, Albert, because... okay, here's one just to try on for size. It is said that the White House is getting kind of antsy about all the attention Scott McClellan's getting, because they're afraid that they have legitimate, and I think well-founded and deserved fears, that they're going to bring the whole Valerie Wilson outing of the spy business, Joe Wilson business back into the forefront of it. And that this time, because the media has already been scolded on it, that they might actually pay attention. And the Bush administration is nervous about that. Now, you and I both remember from the bad old days of the Clinton administration the term "wag the dog."
Mm-hmm.
You remember when the bombing in Kosovo started, and all the Repiglicans got up on the floor and started hollering, "Wag the dog! He's wagging the dog!"
Mm-hmm.
Claiming he was doing it to cover up or to take heat off of himself over, you know, a consensual, not quite sex act. The point is, that really stands in stark relief, Albert. In this case, because say that the heat in the kitchen does start, run the mercury up in the tube a little bit. Well, then, yeah. Do you think George Bush would hesitate for a minute to wag the dog and let fly the dogs of war on Iran sitting there in order to take the heat off of the fact that he's, you know, that maybe the rest of the American people are finally going to figure out that he's a dirty little crook?
Well,
I said the rest of the American people.
I'm glad we're going in this direction. You know, you guys, you know, Mark and you and yourself were speaking about, you know, oh, Pakistan and this and that and Al-Qaeda. Well, you know, listen, Al-Qaeda means the database. That was the database. It was a computer file. Okay, that's why it's called Al-Qaeda. It was a computer file in the
CIA. It also started out as a database of injured Afghan mujahideen that bin Laden, people like him, you know, they were running an old soldiers' aid society, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, come on, he's Goldstein.
Yeah,
he's Goldstein.
Well, I mean, look at the index of these articles of impeachment, Albert. Article 1. I mean, how does this not get proven if it actually goes before a hearing? Article 1, creating a secret propaganda campaign to manufacture a false case for war against Iraq. Hell, it's self-proving.
Yeah.
Article 2, falsely, systematically, and with criminal intent, conflating the attacks of September 11, 2001 with misrepresentation of Iraq as a security threat as part of fraudulent justification for a war of aggression.
Yeah.
That's probably too many words. I'd say Article 2, lying son of a bitch.
Reichstag. That's what I say.
Yeah, Article 3, misleading the American people and members of Congress to believe Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction to manufacture a false case for war.
Mm-hmm.
Misleading the American people and members of Congress to believe Iraq posed an imminent threat to the United States. Illegally misspending funds to secretly begin a war of aggression. Invading Iraq in violation of the requirements of H.J. Res. 114. Invading Iraq absent a declaration of war. Invading Iraq, a sovereign nation, in violation of the U.N. Charter. You know, there's 35 of these, Albert.
Well, Bob, we're already doing this with Iran. You know, it's really funny to say, you know, that, you know, Joe Lieberman and these other, you know, scummy bastards like to talk about how, oh, Iran's supplying the insurgents and, or they call them the terror, but they're the insurgents because they live there and they're fighting back. They're supplying them with X amount of, you know, bombs and technical know-how and all this high-tech stuff, which is a load of BS. It's a complete load of BS. Our own military sits there. They remember they had this, the general come and look at this big, you know, captured stash. It was supposed to be Iranian, and it looks at it, and we look at all the ingredients. Oh, made in USA.
Yeah.
And or, you know, or it was Iraqi to begin with. We've talked about this years ago about the 750 tractor truck loads of explosives that got taken out of Iraq. I mean, taken out of those military bases while we were protecting the oil fields and the ministries while everything was rioting. Well, guess what? I'll tell you what, Bob, and this is, you know it as well as I do, if anybody ever invaded this country, if anybody ever dropped a bomb on your children, if anybody, you and I and everybody else that gives a crap about your sovereignty and freedom would be Allah Akbaring the enemy. We would be planting bombs, we would be cutting heads off, we would be doing insurgent tactics, period. Okay, now, we're talking about Iran now, because if you look, yeah, they're both Shia, oh my God, we go in there, if we do any more than the cold black ops that we've been doing with Iran, and you remember back when Donald Rumsfeld made all U.S. Army guys, he made all of them classified as able to do special ops. Remember that?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so now what does that mean? That means that they can go in and, you know, go in 10 miles or what have you and plant bombs. I mean, they've already got this crap. They've been planting bombs and dropping bombs. And even Omer, this is another article, that every time a bomb goes off in Israel, two are going to go off in Iran. Didn't they talk about this? Don't they want that? No, who was it? There was some maniac, or maybe he was even on our side. These generals over here salivating, they know that these black ops are going on. These guys are paid Pentagon mouthpieces. And they know, and they're just drumming it up. And, you know, we talk about this, too, that if they wanted, they tried to do false flag operations. They've tried Gulf of Tonkin. You know it as well as I do, that if for a very second, if the tape ever never came out with the Iranian boats, man, they would have sat there, and we would have already been at war with them. You know it as well as I do. You know that if the means of communication weren't as fast as they are, okay, that if their BS could be called, it couldn't be called like in the 60s, if it was back like the 60s, and they couldn't ever, nobody could ever, you know, what happened? Oh, here, we got this guy's camera phone, says that, oh, see, it didn't show that. Well, that right there shows, oh, we can't do that, we can't jump on that. On that pongo ball. We can't do this. But however, you know it as well as I do. And this is the same kind of people. They say, oh, well, if Saddam Hussein didn't have weapons of destruction and they wanted to prove the case, why didn't they just plant them? Well, how could you plant Iraqi weapons of mass destruction? What are you going to put? Our anthrax that we put in and mailed to our news outlets and congressmen and senators? Are we going to put, no, you can't, because someone will look at it, someone, that, you know, is just a cog in the machine, but they'll look at it and they'll say, oh, no, this is not from an Iraqi lab, this is from our lab. You know, in order for evidence, it's the same thing with the scientific principle. In order for evidence of a war to begin, right, there has to be some sort of, you know, outside, you know, collaboration where they can sit there and look at the evidence subjectively and say, yeah, oh, this is Iraqi or this is America.
Yeah, casus belli, sure.
Exactly, exactly. So this is where we're at in this whole point here. And the scary thing that I see, I mean, Israel doesn't need an excuse. They look at Hamas and, you know, Hezbollah and all this other stuff. They look at this as a separate entity, that it's not any of their responsibility because they're the victims and they're the ones getting attacked. But come on now. Let's be straight about it. Why is Israel open to these wounds? I mean, we're talking about Barack, oh, it's all the same. Well, that's because, you know, the Israelites, right, all the people that are Jewish, okay, they're not the only Semitic people. The Semitic people, as you know, stretch from the border of Iran all the way across to Morocco, all the whole region. That's all Semitic people. So that's why, you know, they use this phrase, oh, it's anti-Semitic, Israel's just defending itself, la, 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 la. I mean, Israel, how can any of those, I don't care what country gets a nuclear weapon, Saudi Arabia is not a threat to Israel. None of these countries are a threat to Israel because Israel has enough firepower.
Right, they want it as a deterrent to Israel.
You talk about, exactly, we could completely kill every single living thing in the region. Everything.
On the planet, Albert.
Oh, exactly. On the planet. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, they get all worried. Ooh, Israel, they're going to get a bomb. So what? We have 20,000 of these things. 20,000. This is the thing that just blows my ass. We have 20,000 nuclear weapons, all of which can be dialed up into the megaton range. Megaton range has never been used against any type of military installation, civilian population, anything. And if you put a megaton bomb in downtown Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn, Bronx,
Yonkers,
Staten Island, New Jersey, gone. Gone. Just in the blast radius itself. I mean, when they talk about megatons, and all, it just drives me up a freaking wall because, you know, here's the wall, it's coming, and you keep pulling on the horn, and you keep saying, hey, stop this train, no.
Well, do you think, I mean, and this is a legitimate question.
Go ahead.
Do you think in the course of executing the, what Olmert calls the Iranian solution, do you think the United States, I mean, is George Bush actually crazy enough to use a so-called tactical nuclear bunker buster?
See, he is, but the thing is, and we've talked, I think he is, certainly he is. They love to. What are they going to do? They can't do anything. And this is the, Iran is essentially, in terms of, you know, actually inflicting damage, physical damage. I mean, they could do a lot of other crap, and you and I know this. They have all the missiles. I keep saying about the exocets and all that other crap, plus they have ballistic missiles.
Those funky Russian torpedoes that go really, really fast? Yeah.
Yeah, the supersonic missiles, there's fat, you know, Mach 3, Mach 4. I mean, they're insane, and they zigzag, and they do all, they can pin out a carrier, and I'll tell you what, just to be human, screw the country where my parents made love and conceived me and all that other stuff. Okay, regardless of that, just to be a human being, how could Iran not be completely justified? Right, if you dropped a bomb in my neighborhood, I would be justified in attacking you, wouldn't I?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The minute the first bomb goes off, you send the Iranian army across the Iraqi border, and you know our forces are toast.
They're at the races. Our troops are, and plus our troops have already been there. Some guy's been there five times.
Do you think Shia or Sunni, either one? Do you think the Iraqi so-called military is going to stand up and fight the Iranians pouring across to stomp us?
Mm-mm. Oh, no.
It's going to be like what I said tomorrow. Oh, excuse us. Wait, here. Over there, that's who you want.
Yeah, right. I tell you what, we already know, because it's an insurgency over there, and we're occupying. We already know that their military, right, the Iraqi military, has probably entire companies, probably about 80% or more of the commanders, Okay, probably maybe all of them. They're all in the Viet Cong or the Iraqi Cong. Okay, they're all in the Iraqi Cong. Let's start calling them that. Let's just, because the parallels between Vietnam and Iraq, all right, are you have to recognize them.
I mean, they draw a little closer every day, don't they?
Exactly. The only difference being is the resources involved. You know, and you know, in Vietnam we were fighting even more of a fictional ghost. But you know, just to be back, you know, Iran is allowed to have nuclear power. It's like being married. If I was Iran, I would be out of my mind, because it would be like being married to a crazy woman. It'd be like married to a crazy woman who tell you that, you know, I want pasta and this for dinner. You make pasta and this for dinner, and they yell at you.
I wanted.
And it's just like, wait, you said you wanted this, and now you're telling me you're freaking out over here. I signed a treaty saying I won't make any nuclear weapons, but I'm entitled to use nuclear energy and nuclear technology for my own, you know, for infrastructure and so on and so forth. They're building the plans. Sure, they're making their own centrifuges, and if you really want to get to the bottom of it, I mean, that's really what bothers them the most, is the fact that Iran could become, in a sense, self-sufficient and not rely on any of these industries. I mean, you talk about, you know, the oil being, and the oil is a global market, so if we're going to sit there and look at that being a global market, well, just like De Beers Diamond and just like the cartel of oil, you know, man, they're in their own cartel, they have their own little thing, and so does the nuclear power, you know, cartel. You know, there's only a few places that mine and...
Yeah, now you have to like me.
Exactly. Yeah, see, and that's the thing. Is
there are so many jokers in the deck, Albert. For instance, the permanent military base agreement that George says he absolutely will not send to the Congress. He's just going to do it by executive order because I said so.
Yep.
On the other hand, the Iraqi parliament actually has to clear the damn thing. But if George does it by executive order, well, one, he knows he can't get it through the Congress. So he knows he has to do it by executive order, but if it's done by executive order, he can't make it stick, because Barack Obama could come in and go, I cancel this executive order. That's the tough thing about executive orders. They can be eliminated by the next guy who occupies the office.
But see, the thing is even that executive order is null and void if the powers over there get what they want. And what that is if they get, you know, I mean, man.
58 permanent bases? I mean, gee, many Christmas.
Bob, you know how easy it is to get the Iraqi, what have you, blah, 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 all these guys to conform? I mean, you remember the guy, the big, you know, when the surge first started and this guy was, like, rallying all the Shia neighborhoods and he was like, you know, he was becoming our next, you know, Mullah Akbar, whatever he was. You know, he was becoming our next little Saddam because he could kind of, you know, direct where these, you know, militias were doing and all this other stuff. Remember that? And
yeah.
Then he died.
Yeah.
He died in an unfortunate, you know, pressure situation.
Yeah, he fell on his knife on his back 32 times. Yeah,
something like that, and then a big pressure wave came and, you know, obliterated him. And see, this is the thing. I mean, you got to look, you know, what do you think Blackwater's doing over there? What do you think these militias, why do we have as many militia,
mercenaries.
Mercenaries. Why do we have as many mercenaries over there as we do troops? And why do these guys sit in there, I mean, just for what's been recorded and put out on Lively is one of the most disgusting, watch my mouth, but they're committing war crimes. They're just driving around shooting at random people.
Yes, they are.
Or you think that they're above maybe planting bombs in the road? You think they're maybe above, you know, going and doing death squad crap? No, they're not.
A five-star general can look at a Blackwater op and say, go do this. And you know what the Blackwater guy can do? Do it yourself. General.
Yeah,
it's the perfect fascist army. They don't even answer to a military structure.
Exactly. And if they do anything, well, the president can confirm or deny your existence. it's a Mission Impossible mercenary army. And we say, hey, we need everything to calm down. Boom, everything calms down. We need things to get up. Oh, let's put some snipers here and here and here and take out some people in a market. Well, that pisses off the people of the market, as it would anybody who's trying to get some tomatoes, because now their family is half dead, and they go, what are they going to do? They're going to become insurgents.
Hey, at least the Iraqi, at least the Iraqi tomatoes aren't poisoned, Albert.
No, exactly. Yeah, they've got salmonella.
Agnes is under doctor's orders to have one greasy hamburger a week. She and I have turned into Jack Spratt and Mrs. Spratt. You know, Jack Spratt could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean. I can't, but she can, and so we were doing some grocery shopping, and I stopped to get her one greasy hamburger a week, and there was a sign in there: due to the FDA warning, we are not putting tomatoes on our hamburgers until further notice.
I'm
sorry, I know I'm changing the subject and everything, but I'm really not. It's all part of a piece.
Yeah.
That's the screwed upness of living in Bushmerica.
Yeah.
We can't. And do you have any idea how hard it is to get this out of my mouth? The can-do nation, you know, America, the get up and go, if it needs doing, we'll do it, we'll figure out how. The can-do nation can't put a tomato on a hamburger without killing someone. That's where we are. That's 2008. That's Bushmerica.
See, it's not even so much Bushmerica,
Well, okay, Corpmerica.
This is fascist America. I mean, it's not even so much. It's not even that. You know, and this is our vocabulary doesn't expand to include fast enough. All the adjectives, and we don't have the proper terminology to really declare this what it is, because what is it? It's a plutocracy. It's just an unbelievable smorgasbord of almost all the worst things that have ever been, and they're here, and they're in our face, and they're right now. And, you know, I think if Bush, all right, and I agree with you, but if Bush sits there and tries to pull one of these deals, right? Bush probably don't get no blame for, you know, tomatoes in the account of America. But I'll tell you what, if he goes into war, another one, man, he's doomed. He is doomed. He's going to be done.
How?
Right? How? And well, from us, I mean, I would hope to think that all these unemployed people, all these unemployed youths that are going to be the cannon fodder. Because you know that once we strike them, even if it's covertly, we strike them and to make them attack us. And we've been trying this. We've already talked about this. We have been, you don't think the Israeli Mossad is doing all kinds of dirty tricks? Please. This is the thing. People talk about intelligence agencies like they're noble organizations. Intelligence agencies are disgusting, just disgusting human beings. And I mean, I was, you know what, and I don't got no love for it at all. I was in intelligence in the military. And you know what? I tell you what, this is some of the scariest crap you'll ever imagine. And then when you see the history of the crap that our intelligence services do, I mean, come on, Bob. Come on. We can't take this anymore. You know, I talked to my neighbor. I talked to him this and this and this, and you talk, and we're out in the world, and we're sitting there sprinting out, and we're not the only ones that know this. We're not the only ones that know about Iran-Contra affair and cocaine and our, you know, that is imported from these agencies. We don't know about, you know, the failed coup in Venezuela, which is why, he's so horrible, you know, Mr. Chavez. And I mean, some friends of mine, their parents all buy gas from Citgo because it comes from Venezuela.
No, I know.
And it's just like, you know, I don't like that Hugo Chavez.
He's a communist. Like, well, he's a communist.
Yeah, well, why? No, I said, well, why? Well, I just don't like them. So they don't even know. But they do know enough to hear the little bells and whistles. It's the same thing where people call Ahmadinejad and all this other garbage. And they get all bent about them. But you know what? Iran ain't stupid.
Yeah, but you got to admit there's a couple of really, really good nicknames for Ahmadinejad that's come out there.
There are. You know what?
Bart Kopp calls him, I'm a hand job. And somebody else called him, I'm a dinner jacket.
But you know what?
When they do that, and you kind of go, "Huh, that's cute." That's the first step in dehumanizing your perceived enemy.
Exactly. And this is the thing. And this is why, you know, Well, who is the famous Israeli professor, some guy with a PhD, what have you? He compared Israel to Nazi Germany. Okay? Now, I can see that without a doubt. And people go, ooh, and they get all upset. I know, I hear everybody go, ooh, how can he say that? Well, look at the similarities. You know, it's the same principles. I've said it before. It's the same principles as if I was to beat on my children and beat on them and abuse them. And then when they grow up and they have children, they do what? And this is exactly what this has been trained. I mean, it's been indoctrinated. The whole reason, I mean, Israel's been a defensive nation since they first started the first terrorist attack back in the 47. Wasn't it? The first suicide bomber was an Israeli.
You're talking about the King David Hotel and the Irgun?
Yeah, well, you can't say that. Well, why? It's the freaking truth. You know, and you know, Israel wants to go into Iran so badly. Why? Why? Why do they need to do this? Oh, because they're threatening us. Why are they threatening you? Well, because
you've
us.
Got a bunch of nuclear weapons pointed at their heads. But
exactly.
That's
the thing. They got.
But we can't. Albert, we can't talk about that. We can't talk about that. Because if you do, Joe Lieberman will call you an anti-Semite.
See, and this is why we have to talk about it.
I mean, you know, everybody took so much pleasure out of the fact that Barack Obama backed him up against a wall and, you know, spoke to him in the Senate chambers that day, and everybody went, "Oh, that's cool. Yeah, he's got that coming to him."
You know, we did.
but the thing is, the next day, Joe Lieberman comes out and agrees to head a front group of basically Democrats for McCain. And Harry Reid goes, "Well, okay, you know, I mean, you know, he's doing some things that, you know, we're really going to have to rethink our position on Joe Lieberman. I mean, definitely got to rethink it."
What I want to know is about how do we get listened to by these people? Because you and I know, because from our conversations, you and I have talked about this specifically back when Joe Lieberman was running, back when it was Lamont and Lieberman. We talked about this very issue where he should have been, once he decided to do that, he should have been out. But no, they let him keep all his Senate chair seats, and they let him do all these committees and all this crap, but still gave them to Joe, you know. And Joe still serves the Democratic nominee, and... No, I can't do his voice. I know. Here, don't do it.
Okay, I won't do it. I won't do it.
Oh. And anyway, you know, this is the thing. You know, Lieberman and Hagee, they're buddies. Now, that's scary. That is a scary aspect of it to me.
The whole thing's terrifying.
Oh, it is. Did you see what Sidney Blumenthal's son? What's his name? He's got some great clips on.
Max? Yeah, Matt. Oh, yeah,
Max
sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
The clip where Joe Lieberman says that John Hagee is a Moses unto because Moses was a leader unto his people. Yeah, that's pretty.
Oh, he goes to the Christian Zionists, and you know, Bob, you know, you're a smart man. You know about this religion. You know, you should think, all right, listen, what's your religion about? You read the book, you say, yeah, you believe that? You believe this, you believe that, you believe this? And you know what they do? They believe that, well, all the Jews, just like, you know, all the Jews have to be converted to Christianity in order for the Messiah to return and all this other garbage. You know that they buy this. And you know what's scary? These Jews go along with it. Now, I don't know if they're going along with it because they realize that these people have power and that it's going to give them what they want, which is a complete and unified Israel. They can, you know, completely get the borders out, you know, without any wall and then put the wall around that border and take back, you know, land that the Semitic people that were called Israelites had, you know, 3,000 years ago.
All the way to Ur of the Chaldees. Oh, Jesus.
Exactly. But
I mean, after my conversation, you know, Mark doesn't buy into that stuff. Mark thinks that's crazy talk.
It is crazy talk. Mark's not an idiot. He's a smart guy. He has his own feelings about things. I have my own feelings. You have your own feelings about things.
But see, I gotta be so careful with this topic though, because you know, I get emails from people telling me about the world Zionist Jewish conspiracy of murder and mayhem.
Okay.
And I don't want anybody thinking that I'm buying into that crap.
Okay.
Because I don't. You know, I don't buy racist diatribes on any side of the debate.
Oh, certainly, once you get to racism.
I mean, that's one of the reasons that I look with a really jaundiced eye, Albert, when I start, because there are groups out there, and I do know enough that I can spot this stuff when I see it, and I hate it when I see it. There are like videos out there and documentaries that mm-hmm. speak in hushed, whispered tones about the international banking conspiracy.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the only word that they've taken one word out of it, and that word is Jewish.
Yeah.
Okay, and it is code. Because sooner or later, they get liquored up, and they're in a room where they think nobody's talking, and they'll tell you who's running the Jewish banking conspiracy. And then you realize that you're dealing with another one of those learned protocols of the learned elders of Zion types.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that you're gone. You know,
certainly.
I don't buy into that. I don't buy into that insanity. But I also don't buy into the insanity of Ehud Olmert talking about an Iranian solution. I mean, I can't believe that. I don't know. Maybe it's a function of translating Hebrew into English or something. But I can't believe that somebody would be that tone deaf, who just a generation before, somebody else was talking about a Jewish problem, and now he's talking about an Iranian problem.
Or a Palestinian problem. They say the same thing about the Palestinians. You see, and the thing is, Bob, and this is a scary thing about truth, is, you know, pursuing truth and pursuing, you know, ethical, just righteousness, you're gonna have to look at sources. You know what? I'd be the first to tell you. I've filtered many, many golden babies out of raw sewage. Just because something is raw sewage doesn't mean that the whole thing is raw sewage. There's always going to be a little tiny, that's how I'm my optimism. I always look for the silver lining. I always look for the little baby.
The diamond in the dung.
Exactly. I mean, and actions speak louder than words. I do not sit there, and I'm not going to be...
Well, look, you know, I don't call Joe Lieberman Genocide Joe for no reason. I think if Joe Lieberman had a chance to actually kill Arab babies and then eat them, he would.
Yep.
Because he is an insane, evil man. Not because he's Jewish, but because he's insane and evil. And he is a bigot. And he is prejudiced against Muslims and Arabs.
Yes.
And he would like to kill them all.
Perhaps. But the thing is... This is why, in a sense, this is why the words and the terms and the phrases that we use, this is why, like, liberal can't be a bad word. You have to use what the word liberal means. It's the same thing with Zionism. Zionism doesn't mean Jew. It's a political party. It's a political...
No. Wait. I was urging Mark the other day to read a wonderful, wonderful book, and I will make the same recommendation over the air. The same woman who wrote The Guns of August and a number of other wonderful books, Barbara Tuchman, wrote a book called Bible and Sword. Okay? Let us understand first and foremost that the inventors and progenitors of what is commonly called Zionism were not even Jewish. They were religiously insane, fundamentalist, bass-ackward Britons. Lord this and Earl that and Duke somebody and Lady who's this?
Lord Balfour.
Well, now this goes even before. This goes even. I don't have the name at the tip of my tongue, but it goes back before, well before the Balfour Declaration. But okay. these people were actively involved. You know, oh God Almighty! You know, the British Hebrew Society and the stuff like and mission schools and the whole thing. Britain was, and we have a hard time fathoming it because we just can't imagine thinking that way because we're not that way. But certainly, you know, there's not a lot of difference between the fervor that raced across Britain in the mid-19th century and the fervor that races through Kufi now, the Citizens United for Israel. Both of them have a common goal, and that is because they believe it can happen, you know. Because they read a book and they're insane and, you know, but they have as a common position, Albert, the idea that indeed the Jews can and must and shall be converted to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And the progenitors and the originators of what is referred to as Zionism weren't Jewish, They weren't they weren't living in Palestine or the Levant. They were upper crust, well moneyed idiots in England. And it's just that simple. And at first, you know, they went to European Jewish communities and said blah 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 blah, 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 blah. And the people said, "What are you, crazy?"
Oh yeah, the Orthodox. They have seen the Hasidic Jews. Well, New York, it's a huge.
But then they realized that there was something to glom onto here,
yeah.
And that these people had a lot of money, and that they could be used that it could be used toward their own ends. It's the same reason that Joe Lieberman, who is Orthodox, goes and hangs out with John Hagee, who said that Hitler was a divine hunter sent by God to drive the Jews to the promised land. Okay? It's the same you know, he may be nuts, but he's got money, and he's crazy, and he's got money, and we will use him to our own ends.
Yes.
And that has happened a million times throughout human history, regardless of race, regardless of religion, regardless of geographic location. The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Those guys. We create them, guys.
We've gotten good at creating some of them, yes. But so you know, I won't go down the garden path of the international Zionist conspiracies or anything, any of that stuff, because frankly, absent compelling physical evidence, I don't buy into it. And so far, I've read a bunch of it, and I don't buy into any of it, because it all comes across as a cheap excuse for hate. And
it certainly does. It certainly does. But at the same time, Hagee's a Zionist. You know what I'm saying? Have a political agenda. And that agenda has to deal with, well, it's confronting right now with Iran. It was also confronting with Iraq.
But see, when you use Hagee as a Zionist, and then on the other hand, you've got Ahmadinejad out there, the international Zionist conspiracy,
the
word becomes entirely too freighted.
And that's the problem with the whole terminology. This is I weep for vocabulary every day. We don't have the word. I mean, see, you know it. You've covered it. That what Ahmadinejad said is not what was.
He was quoting. He was quoting.
Exactly.
He was quoting the Khomeini.
See, and I don't want to sit here and give anybody a license to hate. However, I want to be as fair as possible, too. I am a liberal person, and I want to be fair. I got to be impartial. I got to be the umpire. I might be a fan of the Yankees, but if I was an umpire, hey, if it's a strike, it's a strike. I have to call it a strike. It's a strike. You're out.
Well, yeah, and you know, what he said, this business about, you know, the state of Israel, whatever phraseology is, will disappear from the map.
The government.
Taken in the long view, you know what I thought about when I first saw that and first started reading about all the hissy that was had over it, is that, one, you know, this is saber rattling, and you'll notice that the price of oil went up, and that was very good for Iran. It was very good for everybody who was in the oil business.
And Russia, who's providing them with nuclear fuel.
Yeah. Sure. But anyway, first thing I thought about is an exchange in one of my favorite books, Catch 22.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old man who lives in the whorehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember I can't remember which character it was. It wasn't Nate Lee. It was Arfie. Arfie. And the old man is querying him about patriotism. Because Arfie is, the United States is the greatest country in the world, blah, 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 blah. And the old man just sits there and says, how long has America been around?
Yep.
And he said, 200 years. How long was Rome around? 1,000 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he says, when the Germans came through, we waved little German flags. Now that the Americans here, we waved little American flags, and we believe America is the greatest country in the world. But when the Germans were here, we thought the Germans were the greatest country in the world. We're losing very effectively here.
Mm-hmm.
And he challenges Arfie to deal with the fact that nobody's going to be here forever. In fact, every country, every nation, every kingdom, every principality has eventually crumbled. You know, when Ahmadinejad says that Israel will disappear from the face of the earth, you know what? Where is the Persian Empire of Darius the Great? You know, he speaks from experience.
Yeah.
You know what? Then you know, I've had email correspondence and things like that with folks who listen to the program. Talked a little bit about, you know, what I think the future holds for the United States. I think eventually the United States falls apart.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there's too much here to manage. Why, you know, eventually California, Washington, Oregon, maybe everything from Colorado westward looks at the rest of the country and says, why are we carrying your dead asses? Why are we carrying Alabama? You know, why are we carrying Iowa? Why are we carrying Vermont? We're talking 300-400 years down the road, maybe,
yeah.
Tops.
Mm-hmm.
And the old Confederacy rebands together, and the Northeast bands together, and it falls apart just like it came together, because it is.
Yeah.
William Butler Yeats who said, you know, the center cannot hold, and that's where we're headed for. We're headed for a situation in which the center cannot hold.
Well,
I suppose some right winger, if he were listening, would say, "Well, you know, Bob, that's because you don't love America." But you know, that's the same thing that Arfi told the old Italian guy in Catch-22. Yeah. You know, you're not patriotic.
Yeah.
And the guy said, "Yeah, but I'm alive."
But see, we hubris, right? It's our hubris. Our hubris is what's going to get us. Our hubris for energy is really what's going to get us, because this is going to be the uppercut that a lot of people are just barely even noticing right now. It is going to be an uppercut. You know, they talk about drilling in Anwar, and they blame the Clinton for blocking that and all this other garbage. There is not enough oil in Anwar to last us 6 months.
Not enough oil. What is it, 6 weeks? Realistically, 6 weeks worth of oil in Anwar.
It's going to last around 6 months. And that's how much we
can. At current consumption rates.
Yeah,
seriously, that's why I want, you know, what a bunch of dumbasses the Saudis are.
I like your solar panel desert area.
Well, yeah, really. I mean, you're the king of Saudi Arabia.
They make ski mountains.
Yes, they do. not the Saudis, but the Bahrainis or whatever, UAE.
One of their clubs.
Yeah. But seriously. If you're in it for the money, why not put all of your oil on the market and burn none of it yourself that you don't absolutely have to? Why not turn, John Fox is all the time talking about those SPEGS systems, that are solar geothermal. Why not, you got a whole bunch of land in Saudi Arabia that you're really not doing anything with.
Yeah.
That you can't do anything with. But it's really sunny and hot there.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth would you not turn that into a giant solar collector? Lord God, the sun striking that could be seen from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And feed your people, power your people. You know, the hell that thing. What could that power? It could power irrigation. You could turn some of that desert into the same sort of green and growing land that Israel turned its desert into.
Desalinization.
Well, yeah, there's that.
Maybe, you know, I mean, heck, it could be actually, I mean, you know, I often think of little tricks to do like that. And, you know, like, well, how could you desalinate water, you know, very efficiently? Cause they would talk about how energy intensive it is.
And it is, because you got to boil the water.
It certainly is. But, you know, if you could pipe it into, you know, to glass roofed irrigation type canals and collect the condensation on the glass, you know, from the water evaporating, well, there you go. And, you know, run it through a carbon filter, and boop, there you go.
And it's interesting. I say it here, and it comes out there. Just got an email rolling in, Albert. You're right, Bob. I held back telling you, but most people out west feel that way already. Everything in the south and the east is dead weight to us. Taxes the dickens out of us, kills our kids in their wars, gives us nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. You see... At heart, I'm an anarchist. I believe in decentralized leadership, and I believe that people in local areas should be able to say what they, you know, say how they should be able to run their stuff. And that's what anarchism is. I know it gets, you know, from COINTELPRO and all that other garbage that the FBI and the CIA and the NSA and all these other groups do. you know, they turned it into this, you know, horrible, scary thing where anarchy and people were throwing bottles through Starbucks and all that other garbage. But, you know, and then they find out these people are basically, you know, what do they call those agents? If it's a French word,
Zaboteur?
Agent
provocateur?
Yeah, exactly. And these are the things that, you know, that these things constantly occur. And I think you're right. I think, you know, when you sit there and you look at just history, and you're going to try to scale us out into any kind of time span, well, man, we should be building this stuff ourselves. Why should we be giving these people money? Why are we giving these people money just so we can burn our cars? Man, we have the technology now. We could sit there and do, if we did, there's a brilliant, brilliant PhD in plasma and all this other stuff. This guy's name is Eric Lerner. And he is heading some corporation, what have you, to develop something called the Focus Fusion Plasma Device, okay? Now, this is sort of, I don't know if you know anything about the Sandia Laboratory Z machine, where they pump, you know, like a fourth of what the world generates in electricity, they pump through this capacitor, you know, in a fraction of a second.
Yeah, I know about Sandia Labs.
And they're trying to generate super hot temperatures. And they're doing this with basically, well, the force that steers the universe, which is the thunderbolt. This is another thing. And even science, Bob, even science is, man, they're stuck in their own paradigm. Politics is stuck in their own paradigm. Geopolitical crap. I mean, why does Israel want to attack Iran? We've already discussed this. Well, why are the Zionists supporting the Christian Zionists, you know, all these Christians, you know, why do we support this stuff? Because they have this own paradigm where they think that the Messiah is going to come.
Even in my conversations, both private and public, with Mark, he admits that a vast part, I don't know if he'll say a majority, but I'll say a majority, a vast part of the fascination that the United States and Britain has, you know, Britain started it, and, you know, Britain sneezed and we got the flu. Our fascination with Israel is a biblical fascination, and it stems from that same thing I was talking about, this idea of conversion and this perfect world that happens, and Jesus comes out of the clouds and in his holy rolls, and everybody gets Frisbees and wheat checks. Albert, I'm going to roll here in just a second, but I did want to ask you, because I was thinking about you when I saw the news coming out of the Midwest. Is everything okay there where you are? I mean, Jesus, what a mess that is up there.
You know what? Last year we got hammered here. This is a little town. So I live in a little area here. It's a gorgeous area, Bob. If you ever get a chance, if you're ever out this way, man, you can come crash. You can sleep in my bed. That's not a problem. You come out here, you see it's kind of hills and valleys and all these little peaks and stuff. And we live on top of one of the ridges around here. So we got tons of rain, and I got some water in my basement. However, actually, you're going to love the name of this town. There's a town roughly about 5 miles down the road from me, but it's down in a valley, and it's called Avalanche. And a guy completely lost his house. So, but they got hit last year too, and oh man, and then that ties right back up into, you know, this area is so prone to this flooding, and they want to put this coal ash, like, dump over here, and it would be right on
top. Yeah, it's going to work out real well.
All these dams, oh, it's just an unbelievable thing. It's an unbelievable thing. We have all these breaks, all these dams around here, and I do live about 2 miles down the road from another one. It's like an earthen wall, giant. It's a pretty little area, like, oh, that's a cool little park, but because there's nothing, you know, going down right now. But at the same time, right now, we got hammered with rain. It wasn't as bad as last year. Last year was far worse compared to this year. But, yeah, we have been getting hit, and thanks for thinking about me. I think about you if I hear something.
All right, Albert, you take care, brother.
All right, Bob, I'll talk with you later.
Okay, see ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. Wow, great conversation. Again, you know, remember, that can't happen on terrestrial commercial radio. Just can't. Just for information's sake, Saudi Arabia already uses desalinization extensively, that's true. Why do we worry about their profit and not our own? Why don't we desalinate? Why don't we have desert solar works? Well, yeah, desalinization we don't necessarily need so much for our own purposes here because it is so energy intensive. I know that the Australians, I think I've heard John talking about, the Australians do it extensively. But why don't we have desert solar works? Amen. You know, why not? Well, why not? Because we don't have the will to, because we don't want to, because we don't care to, and because by the time that we get to the point where we need to, we won't be able to. Yeah, I know. There goes Bob getting all grim again. But we are, look, I'm not making, you know, it's not like I'm the first guy who said it, but in fact, it was probably a Republican who said it. It was some capitalist, some profiteer who said, you will never go broke underestimating the American people. And it's true. You know, we can't be, some of this stuff is just so simple and so self-evident as to amaze you if you consider that no one's interested in it. The idea that our buddies down on Coal River have for creating a wind farm on top of Coal River Mountain instead of blowing Coal River Mountain, 400 feet from its tip to its base, or not to its base, but, you know, way the hell down. Instead of doing that to preserve the mountain and get, if you're going to get at the coal, my God, it was featured in the local newspaper not too long back. They have presented a full plan that calls for mining the coal by traditional methods underground, getting it out. Somebody can help me. 60-70% of the coal under Coal River Mountain can be gotten, and on top of Coal River Mountain, up where there's a constant breeze, a constant updraft out of the valley that wouldn't be there when the mountain's blown away, put a wind farm. And of course, putting the wind farm in means you've got to have a lot of good paying jobs. A lot of good, hard working union labor would likely go into building that. You know, people who are actually supporting the economy and contributing to the economy and actually make enough money that they can go out and buy stuff like cars and televisions and ranges and refrigerators and, you know, pay for ballet classes for their daughters and, you know, the pitching classes and baseball for their sons and soccer for both of them and football and basketball and on and on and on. That stuff happens with this kind of forward thinking. But, it remains to be seen. I know the folks on Coal River are going to push for this very, very hard, as well they should. And all of my fondest hopes are behind it. Unfortunately, some of our elected representatives aren't. And it will be uphill sledding, pushing the sled with one foot in a bucket to get it done, because of the beholden nature of people to coal. And they're not even suggesting to stop mining the coal. They're just saying, don't destroy the mountain in the process. Which strikes me as, you know, having an element of, you know, genius to it. It's a happy, happy situation for everybody except Massey. Because Massey does it, and Peabody and Arch, because they'd rather just blow the mountains up because that's cheaper and it you don't have to pay very many people very much money to do it. You know, that's what we're facing. You know, I saw a thing earlier today one of the big website, the money kind of people, all about, here it is. Let's see if we can get this to play. You're going to love this. It's just charming. This is a guy named Jubak, J-U-B-A-K. And he's a financial analyst. You know, he's one of these guys who really knows what he's talking about when it comes to money. He can shuffle the money with the very best of them. And this is, I mean, you might as well get this because I got it earlier today and it, you know, made me want to vomit. So, you know, all we got in common is our misery. So the least we can do is share it. Check this out. It'll load. Oh, wait. We don't want the commercial. Yeah, okay. He'll start in just a minute. No, it's, you know, think about coal. Think about coal. Yeah. Here we go.
Hello, my name is Elliot Yu, and I'm the editor of The Energy Strategist, which is a twice-monthly publication covering the global energy markets. One market that we've spent an awful lot of time talking about over the last couple of years has been coal. A lot of people think coal is a dead fuel, but if you look out there, most countries are heavily reliant on coal.
Well, see, that's one place he's wrong. I don't think of coal as a dead fuel. I think of coal as a deadly fuel. There's a little bit of a difference. But, you know, it's all about the money. I'm sorry, Elliot Gew, I think he said was his name. Apparently the author of this column is the guy named, brother. Here we go.
All for their electricity generation. In the United States, we generate about 52% of our power from coal. In places like China and India, it's typically more than three-quarters of the grid. Obviously, we are seeing some environmental resistance to new coal plant building here in the U.S., and we've certainly seen that be an issue for coal in terms of new plants being constructed and the potential for, you know, carbon dioxide regulation in the United States here over the next couple of years.
Wait a minute. We've seen some environmental resistance to coal. You know, because the environmentalists, you know, that's what they're resistors. It's not actually that we care more about the rest of humanity than you, you profit-taking horse's ass. No, it couldn't possibly be that. We're resistors. Why don't you just call us communists?
Utilities really aren't sure what form that regulation will take, and therefore they're reluctant to go out and build a new coal plant with an operating license of 30 years if they have no idea how much it's going to cost for them to operate that plant. But outside the U.S., it's a very much a different story. If you look at China, each and every year, China adds generating capacity equal in size to the entire United Kingdom, each and every year. They're building one new coal-fired power plant approximately once every week to 10 days. Demand for coal is surging in China.
Here it comes. See, that coal that they want to either blast or blow or, you know, under the best of circumstances, dig from underneath places like Coal River Mountain? It's not to generate electricity in America. It's for the profiteers. It's for the robber barons to sell to the Chinese. Not that I got anything against the Chinese, because I don't. But you know what? I'm not willing for my children to suffer so that the Chinese can add the electric generating capacity of Great Britain every year to build stuff in factories that are staffed by children as young as 11 and 12 years old on so-called work-study programs, so it can be brought by boat back over here and sold in the local Walmart to a gullible, consumerized public. Nah, I don't want to be on that side of that argument, because I like being able to look at myself in the morning every day, whether I shave or don't. You know what I mean?
If you look at it, historically, China has been the largest producer and the largest consumer of coal in the world. But typically, they have not been import dependent. In other words, they hadn't had to import coal from other countries to meet their domestic demand. That's changing. Last year, for the first time in its history, China was a net importer of coal. And I believe that they're probably going to become a much bigger importer of coal here over the next few years. And this has tightened up that market greatly over the last couple of years. We have seen coal prices rise a lot. But I think there's probably more room for upside. Interestingly enough, we're also seeing the U.S. producers becoming bigger exporters. Traditionally, the U.S. market's been mainly a domestic production, domestic consumption market.
And there it is. It's not, you know, it's not crazy old Bob saying it anymore. This is a bona fide, genuine financial analyst. American coal producers are becoming exporters of coal. Not using it domestically. Oh, some. But most of it, pure profit, pure offshore. And, you know, we don't even get the benefit of it here in West Virginia. No. Nope. Don Blankenship gets the benefit of it. The shareholders of Massey and Arch and Peabody get the benefit of it when they can do it. But see, the coal is such a filthy little dodge that even the shareholders don't get the benefit of it, because most of the time these filthy corporations can't even declare a profit. But yet they keep giving raises to the Don Blankenships of the world. Oh, you know, good work if you can get it, I guess. If you ran a small business, let's say you had a small engine repair shop, and you tried to run it on the model of Don Blankenship and Massey Energy, A, you'd go out of business, and B, once you were out of business, the authorities would be on you for the fraud that you had perpetrated on the public. It kind of says something, doesn't it?
We're actually seeing the U.S. producers participate more in exports to other countries. One company to look at in that regard is Peabody Energy, symbol is BTU. They are not only a large producer and the largest producer in the United States with a gigantic position in the Powder River Basin in the western U.S., they also bought Xcel Coal of Australia a few years back, which is a major exporter of coal to China and will really benefit from rising prices in China over the last couple of years, and I think it's likely to continue.
Well, there you have it. If you love money more than you love your children, if you love being able to buy Swiss watches more than you love being able to breathe, if you love, you know, being able to drive a Cadillac Escalade on your coal money more than you love your wife because she's full of mercury now and your children are 10 points dumber because of coal and mercury than they would have been otherwise, then, you know, you need to take a position in the coal market. Because it's an emerging market now that American coal companies are more participating more in the export market. You know, I can look at myself in the mirror every morning. Sometimes I do even shave. I don't know how that guy does. Money, 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 money. What a boring life he must lead. Money, 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 money. Dear, would you like some breakfast? Money, 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 money. What are we doing this weekend? Money, 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 money. Honey, the children's birthday is coming up. We'll give them some money, 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 money. Just charming. Yep, we can export coal because it's filthy, but we can't manage to get the tomato onto the greasy hamburger because it's got salmonella all over it. It's a beautiful thing. It is simply a beautiful thing. Welcome to Merca. And while I do misgivings about where this country is headed and what we're going to be subjected to between now and November. Witness, for instance, this story from the Boston Globe. Headline, Willie Horton, ad creator, takes on Obama. Damn, you knew it was coming, didn't you? Floyd G. Brown, the man who crafted the Willie Horton ad that sank Michael Dukakis in 1988, is on board for McCain. He's raising money for a series of ads that he says will show Barack Obama to be out of touch on an issue of fundamental concern to voters, violent crime. Lord God. Strap in, baby, because here we go. One spot already on the internet attacks the presumptive Democratic nominee for opposing a bill while he was in the Illinois legislature that would have extended the death penalty to gang-related murders. When the time came to get tough, Obama chose to be weak. Can a man so weak in the war on gangs be trusted in the war on terror? Willie Horton gonna get your mama. And of course, you know what the imagery will be. Oh, sure. Trust me, they're not going to show a picture of little white children as members of gangs. No, 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 no. Nuh-uh. Nope. I told you this was coming. And it is. It's what we've got to be ready for. And by be ready for it, I mean be ready to absolutely fight back with our fangs bared and our claws out. Because this is going to be nasty. They're already getting in. The Swift boat is already chucking upriver. Republicans think that Obama is vulnerable on the crime issue and hope to inject it into the campaign. Crime issue, my ass. This isn't a crime issue. This is a race issue. Because he voted against the death extending the death penalty for gang crimes. Now, I suppose we could go into the whole discussion, but there's really no point in it, because you already know that the death penalty doesn't deter crime. There is not a single statistic that indicates that the death penalty deters crime. Not one. There are a lot of statistics that indicate that many people have been unjustly put to death after bad prosecutions and phony, dummied-up, ginned-up evidence. Lots of evidence along those lines. But there is not one shred of evidence that the death penalty deters crime. Can a man so weak in the war on gangs be trusted in the war on terror? Here we go. Here we go. But that's not to say that John McCain doesn't have his own problems. No, not in the least. The folks on the right wing are terribly pissed off right now. They were claiming, I think yesterday, that the McCain camp has declined to meet with Billy Graham. Billy Graham's a saint. Billy Graham's one breath away from Jesus.
In another disturbing sign that Senator John McCain has little interest in reaching out to his conservative base, including evangelical Christian voters, his campaign has declined an offer to meet with the Reverend Billy Graham.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. In May, we contacted the McCain campaign with an offer to arrange such a meeting as we had done between candidate George W. Bush and Graham during the 2000 election. The rejection of an offer to meet with Graham is yet another indication that the McCain campaign has made a deliberate strategic decision to chart a new course for the GOP, a course without the sizable evangelical Christian voting bloc serving as its base. The new course is likely designed to pick up disaffected Democrats, even Senator Hillary Clinton's women supporters who are pro-choice. But the risk is not just that the Republican nominee will lose evangelical voters, but that he will lose its massive infrastructure, megachurches with their schools, television programs, and massive mailing lists which traditionally play a crucial role for Republicans in voter registration and voter turnout. The cost to the party of replicating this role themselves would be incalculable. To which I say, bug spray. Come November, all the weird little right-wing fundies will march dutifully in lockstep because they are, after all, authoritarians, and they eventually do what they're told, and they will march in lockstep, and they will go and vote for John McCain. Although there are questions out there, and I think that they're fair questions to ask, namely, why is it, or how is it that the right-wingers are going to square John McCain's marital history with his piety? I read an article today from one of the British newspapers. God knows you wouldn't expect to see this in a, you know, American medium. About McCain's first wife. About how she prayed and waited for McCain to come home. About how McCain had married her when he was 28 years old and adopted her two children by a previous marriage. How they had had their own daughter by that marriage, his daughter Sydney. And about how, while he was in captivity with the North Vietnamese, denouncing the United States of America at every opportunity he got, and doing it so on recordings so that they could be played inside the prison camp for the rest of the POWs to hear. How when he returned, he found out to his horror, that she had been debilitated in a horrible, horrible car wreck from which she had had to go through dozens of surgeries, and that where she had been a tall and beautiful model when he left, he came home to find her shorter by 4 inches and full of bolts and plates and screws, and was barely home for any time at all before he ran into this lovely, young, blonde beer heiress, whom he married 6 weeks after the divorce to his debilitated wife was final. I want some of those right-wing character Republicans, those family values Republicans, to explain to me how they're going to square that up. How they're going to make that fit within the family values agenda. I mean, after all, the right-wing Republicans are forever talking about how they want to defend marriage. Well, how are they going to square that up with the fact that John McCain had one that he had 3 children in, but he didn't care much about defending it? Away he flew, baby. I need a Republican to explain that to me. How it is that family values only apply when it's, what, convenient. By the way, the right-wingers got busted after a report indicated that John McCain had rebuffed an offer to meet with Billy Graham. The McCain campaign immediately came out and started, you know, with the asbestos boots trying to stomp out the fire. Christian Ferry is McCain's deputy campaign manager, and he said the campaign has been in the process of setting up a meeting between McCain and Graham. A misunderstanding of McCain's intentions apparently arose because on June 3rd, the campaign sent a routine letter declining an offer by Brian Jacobs, a Fort Worth, Texas minister, to broker a meeting between McCain and Billy Graham. Now, however, they're saying, no. It's not that way. He's not rebuffing McCain. McCain's not rebuffing Billy Graham. No, that couldn't possibly. No. See, he didn't snub Billy Graham. It's okay to vote for him. Jeez. It's amazing, isn't it? They will lie. They will make stuff up. Barack Obama, if he can't be trusted in the war on gangs, how can he be trusted in the war on terror? And they will have millions of dollars for this smear job. And I pray, to the extent that I pray that Barack Obama is up to the task. Because this is going to be bare-knuckled. You know, John McCain's going to stand up there and talk about how, you know, we might have a war with Iran's Barack Obama, he wasn't in the military. He doesn't have the military experience that I do. Tell us about your military experience there, John! Most of your military experience was spent in a POW camp after you got shot down. And the experience you had in the military camp, you know, this isn't me sliming him. I'm not making this stuff up. He put it in his own autobiography. He freely admitted that he denounced the United States of America. Well, you know, all you got to do is show a photograph of, like, the earlobe of Jane Fonda to a right-winger, and they start losing their tiny little mind. Oh, she hates him. She went to Vietnam, and she denounced America. Well, Jerk Waters, so did your presidential nominee. Square it up for me, buddy. Well, she demoralized the troops. Well, they played John McCain's tapes for the rest of the POWs in the camp. Do you reckon that was demoralizing? Jane Fonda was, you know, thousands of miles away. John McCain was right there in the camp, and all they had to do was look over there. Hey, look, there's the guy that denounces America on the tapes every day. The question is, will the for-profit media call him on it? So far, the answer is no. You guys are just mean. Email. McCain's campaign manager is a Christian Ferry? Did I hear you right? His name is Christian Ferry. F-E-R-R-Y, you mean people. Yeah, in the article, Ross Perot paid for... Yeah, this is a beautiful thing. Jeez, I can't get anything past you guys. In the article, it makes clear that Mrs. McCain's medical bills were paid, her surgeries were paid, not by John McCain, not by her lawfully wedded husband in their traditional Christian family values marriage, but by Ross Perot. Because Ross Perot felt an obligation to do more for service members' families. This guy wants to be president of the United States. There are quotes in the Daily Mail? I can't get at the link right yet. There's a guy in there, you know, he was a playboy. He wasn't serious then, and he's not serious now. And he's not fit to lead this country. He is not fit to be the... Oh, what a George Bush... I want to be the CEO of America. He's not fit for that. But you got to read it in the Daily Mail in the UK. You can't read it in a newspaper in Merca. Because in Merca, that would be... Well, that wouldn't be that would be unfair. Even as we speak, by the way, Dennis Kucinich is in the House of Representatives as his bill of impeachment is read into the record. It's on C-SPAN if you want to get that going too. Or you can just read them. Interesting though that. Upon putting them up on his website shortly thereafter, what the Kucinich office is calling suspicious circumstances, the website was crashed. Now, I can see how liberals and decent people all over America might have crashed it unintentionally, just trying to get at the articles, because it is big news. It's a little bit of inspiration in a time when we are in desperate need of inspiration. Yeah, we went through a few of them talking with Albert. Article 7, invading Iraq, absent a declaration of war. Article 8, invading Iraq, a sovereign nation in violation of the UN Charter. Article 9, failing to provide troops with body armor and vehicle armor. Article 10, falsifying accounts of U.S. troop deaths and injuries for political purposes. Article 11, establishment of permanent U.S. military bases in Iraq. Article 12, initiating a war against Iraq for control of that nation's natural resources. Article 13, creating a secret task force to develop energy and military policies with respect to Iraq and other countries. Article 14, misprison of a felony, misuse and exposure of classified information and obstruction of justice in the matter of Valerie Plame Wilson, clandestine agent of the Central Intelligence Agency. Article 15, providing immunity from prosecution for criminal contractors in Iraq. Reckless misspending, Article 16, and waste of U.S. tax dollars in connection with... Okay, Article 16, let's go there real quick, because there's a... again, the for-profit media in the United States couldn't be bothered to come up with this, but thank God there is still the BBC. A BBC investigation estimates that around $23 billion may have been lost, stolen, or just not properly accounted for in Iraq. how sad it is that we have to rely on the BBC to bring us anything approaching the facts regarding Iraq and the boondoggle and the financial hellhole. It's a hole in the sand that we just dump more blood and money into. We got to rely on the BBC to uncover this stuff. Amazing, isn't it? Well, at least if only they discovered that a Mexican took it, maybe Lou Dobbs would cover it. If they could prove that General Electric had something to do with it, I'm sure Falafel Man O'Reilly would be screaming his fool head off about it. But no. It's far too prosaic for that. It's just common, ordinary thievery, burglary, what have you. For the first time, the BBC says, the extent to which some private contractors have profited from the conflict and rebuilding has been researched by the BBC's Panorama using U.S. and Iraqi government sources. A U.S. gag order prevents discussion of the allegations. Gee, a gag order. That's some freedom of speech we got going for us, isn't it? The order applies to 70 court cases against some of the top U.S. companies. The BBC notes that as long as George Bush is still in the White House, it's unlikely the gag orders will be lifted. To this date, no major U.S. contractor faces trial for fraud or mismanagement in Iraq. Henry Waxman, they quote, as saying, the money that's gone into waste, fraud, and abuse under these contracts is just so outrageous, it's egregious. It may well turn out to be the largest war profiteering in history. The BBC says that the search for the missing billions also led the program to a house in Acton in West London where Hazem Shalom lived until he was appointed to the new Iraqi government as Minister of Defense back in 2004. He and his associates siphoned an estimated $1.2 billion out of the ministry. Then they bought old military equipment from Poland but claimed it as top-class weapons and diverted the money into their own accounts. An Iraqi judge says he believes these people are criminals. They failed to rebuild the Ministry of Defense, and as a result, the violence and the bloodshed went on and on. The murder of Iraqis and foreigners continues, and they bear responsibility. He was sentenced, Mr. Shalan was, to two jail terms, but of course, he and the money left the country, claiming innocence. He has an Interpol arrest warrant out for him, but he's on the run using a private jet to move around the globe, and still owns commercial properties in the Marble Arch area of London. So, yeah, there might be a little bit of something behind that business about, in Article 16 of Dennis Kucinich's Articles of Impeachment about reckless misspending and waste of U.S. tax dollars in connection with Iraq and U.S. contractors. Oh, there's 35 of these articles, and what I read coming from out of Dennis Kucinich's office said that it might take as much as 5 hours to read all of this into the record. Might be the most worthwhile thing that's been read into the record in the House of Representatives in, what, 50 years? Yeah, easy. Let's try the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Ed, what's up?
Not a whole lot. I listened to some of your other talk, and you was talking about the United States and where we were and where we're going to be and was we going to play a part. But, you know, the book, the Bible, don't even tell us that we're a part of the picture at the end.
Well, no, it'd be hard-pressed to do that because there wasn't a United States when it was written.
Yeah, and the other part of it is talks about the burning of a fourth of it, and you wonder just how much of it's going to be left after the kind of people that we got runs this country. You know, between the melting of the Arctic Circle and the burning and the disastrous weather we've been having, you wonder what's going to be left of it if it gets any worse.
Well, you know, the chairman of the Fed said, I guess, either yesterday or early today, that we're not going to have a recession after all.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's not going to be a recession, and investors need not worry, and investors need to get back into the market. Everything's going to be all right.
Yeah, well,
I'm guessing that sucker doesn't put gas in his own tank.
Yeah, and I doubt that he's got anything in the market. Them kind of guys don't have to gamble with the market. They got enough bankroll to where they don't have to worry about it.
Well, sure. And he's probably got a hefty portfolio, but he's the chairman of the Fed. He can make his portfolio do. He can make it jump through hoops if he wants to.
Yeah. So I was just listening to some of the conversation that was going on and trying to really visualize where we were, what part we were going to play in it. And where we are right now, how less important we are than we were 25 years ago.
Well, but we're important enough that we will do the bidding. George Bush will do the bidding and do what he's told and go bomb Iran, apparently, from what the news is saying.
I really believe that you know what you're talking about there. I believe that that's coming, and it's being talked up just like... only not quite at the speed that Iraq was. But I do believe it's coming. And he make one last hit before he gets out.
And he will do it specifically to see, that's why I keep saying it's gonna happen after the election. Again, Ed, I reiterate, these crooks operate according to a pattern, and they don't have any new ideas. His daddy handed a war to Bill Clinton on the way out of office with Somalia, and I wouldn't put it past George Bush for one instant to hand one off to Barack Obama.
Well, regardless whether he gets into it with Iran or not, Obama's going to have his hands full with what he's already done.
Well, gosh, yes, and the whole point would be to make it impossible for him to have any kind of a meaningful presidency. See, that so many people forget, and I don't know why, Ed, and I know you're not one of them, but so many people forget that the Republicans do not love this country. They talk about loving this country. But there is a wide gulf between loving this country and talking about it.
Well, it's just like this, the terminologies that they use is like right to work. That sounds real good, but it's a disguise to right to work for less. And by the same token, they've got a little slogan or a front for everything they do. And you know what, gets me is all of them look alike. I was watching a couple of them a while ago, and it's Sessions and the one from Pennsylvania. I can't remember his name, and one of them from Oklahoma. You know, they act like if they ate sour grapes. They're the most despisable looking people and miserable people that you could ever run into.
Well, you're exactly right, and they are hateful in the truest sense of the word, in so much as they are full of hate, Ed.
Yeah. Where does it come from, Bob? Are they wired that way, or why do they hate? Why do they hate? You know, Hitler was the same way.
It comes from a place in their soul where they're afraid that somebody's going to get something that they're not. It's motivated by jealousy. You know, that's why Republicans, that's why Ronald Reagan invented the myth of the welfare queen. Because he wanted to create in the minds of Americans that there was a class of people out there who didn't deserve anything, who were getting something over on the American people. And it's the same thing with Pastor Hagee when he stands in his pulpit, him all fat and corpulent and doughy with the jowls hanging around his face, screaming at people to starve. And the audience sitting there in the pews just a-clapping.
Well, he's got a bunch of richies following, and he's the same way with this, what's his name, Ron
Parsley?
Parsley?
Yeah, same cat.
All them idiots are in the same boat, and, you know, I'd love to get them together and challenge them on just their theory of war, the theory of hunger, the theory of not taking care of the poor, the very things that Jesus Christ did, they're saying no to.
Yes, absolutely. Can you imagine? You know, these fundies like to wear these little bracelets that say WWJD, you know, what would Jesus do? Can you imagine if Jesus Christ was standing in the back of that auditorium when Pastor Hagee was screaming starve at the top of his hateful lungs? What would Jesus do? I'd like to think that he'd knock him down with a lightning bolt or something.
Yeah.
Or, you know, cast a swine herd's worth of demons into him. Or, you know, no, because he's already full of them to begin with. That may be the problem. He's, you know.
Well, what in the world are the churches in this? You know, in some of the foreign countries, you don't have much. They don't have much to do with the way we believe anyway, as far as church. But what are we coming to? That's, you know, the church is absolutely killing people. And I know this is not Wednesday night prayer meeting, but that's part of what's wrong is the kind of leadership we got in Washington and in the preachers. You know what I think about it? The definition of religion. Or salvation is another form of social control. It helps the cops, and it helps control a whole group of people that the cops don't have to worry about, and it's a big control of money for the preachers.
Yes, it is.
That's what it's all. That's how I read it. I mean, I can't read it no other way. And that's not to say there isn't a few good, humble preachers. But they're not in the Hagee and the other group that we know about. It's just not in those kind of people. If you're going to find that, you're going to find it in a little church that has 50 or 60 people. It's like the one we went across the river here to, that the guy didn't ask if there's any of you needs anything or needs money. He asked if you know of anybody. To me, I read that statement as anybody in or out of the church needed help to let him know. Now, that's what I call outreach or the movement of the church. It's not these Shirley Love type churches where they got the big organ and then go out and cuss and take advantage of people. And I just don't have any use. When you say church to me, the first thing is done is I'm turned off until it's proven different. Used to be you had to prove to me they were bad. Now you have to prove to me they're good. And that's how.
But that's nothing. That's not a change in you, Ed. That's them. They're guilty until proven innocent in my book too.
Well, when I lay down at night, I feel guilty about maybe the guilt is knowing what's going on and having to face it. I don't know. But I do know that there's something dramatically wrong with what goes on in the churches. And it's not, I mean, in the ones that seems good, And I'm going to put it real blunt. The preacher's either licking his fingers from chicken or zipping his pants. And that just, and I'm talking about 8 out of 10 of them that I know. So I just don't have it. When you mention Christians and preaching and this type of stuff, you've backed me off and caused me to throw up my guard.
Well, Ed, I mean, honest to God, you know what I said earlier. How are these fundies going to square up a man who walked out on a sick wife? How are they going to square that up?
How are they going to square up what, Bob? I'm sorry.
John McCain walked out on his wife when she was debilitated from a car wreck. The woman raised his children. The woman waited for him to come home from the POW camp, and he gets home and he runs off on her with a blondie.
Is that the one he's with now?
Yeah.
Well,
the woman had, his first wife had a car wreck. She had been an absolute stunning beauty, okay? She was, in the common parlance, a hottie. But while he was in the POW camp, she slid on some icy roads and took out a tree or a post or whatever and went through the windshield and just about got killed. And required surgery after surgery after surgery that Ross Perot paid for to keep her alive. And he got back and stayed with her for a couple of years and then bailed out on her when Cindy McCain winked and grinned at him. Well, she wasn't Cindy McCain then, but... And then he was off and gone. And he used Cindy's money to buy his first wife silence, giving her a house in D.C. and a house in Florida, and promising to pay alimony and child support.
Well, typical Republican.
He ran it. My God, I mean, there's low in this world, Ed. You know what I mean?
Well, they got another now that they've caught up in a... Governor, I think he's governor of Nevada. They've caught him up in some extra activity, and his wife is refusing to move out of the governor's mansion.
Well, I know they did that to Giuliani in New York. His wife wouldn't move out of Gracie Mansion, and Giuliani had to go stay with friends. You know, there's another one.
Yeah.
But I mean.
That's your moral majority.
I mean, is there anybody sitting in the pews? Because you know how this works, Ed. You and I both know. As we get closer to November, the preacher will be standing in the pulpit talking about how we got to elect a family values president.
You know, this family values stuff stinks. You know, I wouldn't listen to one of them. And there's probably some good people in that. But when you talk about family values to me, that's another turnoff. That's all that is to me.
It's another fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to, you know. But then again, time after time after time, whatever reason you ascribe for it, Bill and Hillary Clinton have been married to each other, the same people, no others, for decades now. But, you know, we needed to elect a family values man like George Bush.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, oh, God, it just goes on and on and on.
Keep his eyes off of, what's her name, Rice?
Condoleezza Rice, sure.
Yeah, I mean, he likes to look that over. I've seen that twice. But I was going to comment on the coal thing a little bit. You know, you've got the only thing that's worse than Friends of Coal and the John Birch Society and these people, and now, and preachers and car salesmen, the top of the list is your Chamber of Commerce, and you know where they stand. They back people like your big coal barons that you spoke of.
Yeah, Blankenship, and yeah.
When will the people wake up and realize that the Chamber of Commerce and the Friends of Coal is just they're just one organization. That's they're for the same purposes, and I don't know how many different, you know, you got the Heritage Foundation. All of these people they've got the same purpose. They're just using a different gun.
Yeah.
One's got a 44 and the other a 45, and all of them will get you.
Yeah, because...
When are they going to wake up, Bob? When is society really going to wake up?
Maybe society wakes up when we decide to wake up society, Ed.
Yeah, but how?
One person at a time. If that's how we got to do it, one person at a time. I keep saying we do it when we're talking to our neighbor at the gas pump. We do it in line at the grocery store. You know, in line at the post office. You don't have to start a fight with anybody. Just start with something generic and never let them know until the knife's all the way in, so to speak.
Well, you know how ignorant they are. I got a friend. I really don't care if he's listening. I play golf with him. We were coming down the hill at Mount Hope. We was coming from Beckley playing golf the other day. And some way politics was brought up. I guess probably I did it because I'm pretty aggressive on it. And I said the best people that could have run is not running. And he said, well, at least McCain served his country. I said, oh. Before I realized it, I said, oh, war counts. Yeah, we got to count war. That's number one with a Republican. And I wasn't sure he was a Republican. He had a lot of ways because he liked that old Bill, whatever his name, that comes in on it late at night there. I know you know who I'm talking about.
No, O'Reilly?
Bill O'Reilly. He likes him, and he listens to those Fox stations. And when we parted, he didn't say thanks, had a good time, I'll see you, I'll call you, and he hasn't. And you know something? The real thing about it is I don't care. You know, the characteristics or the characters, personal character that a guy's got, is what causes you to be able to get close to him and be a friend.
Yeah.
And a person that is that backward and that ignorant about things, I just don't...
Well, you know, it's easy to confront those people. You know, you just look at them, Ed, and you say, are you telling me that military service is a requirement?
Yeah. Well...
Because if you are, what are you going to do about the punk that's been in the White House for the last 8 years? He ran out on his military service.
And the vice president was worse.
And the vice president got 5 deferments. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Ed, I gotta run, though. We're slap out of time.
You know, I didn't mean to take up that much time.
That's all right. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it immensely.
Okay, well, I'll be talking at you.
All right. Soon. You take care, Ed.
All right. Tell everybody we said hi.
I was going to say hi to Dreamer for us.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Ed from across the river. A lot of plain, just common sense. Just common sense. And, you know, if some right-winger does try to talk to you, to say something, ask him. You and your family values, how are you going to square up walking out on a sick wife? How are you going to square that? To marry a multi-millionaire heiress? How are you going to fit that in with your family values? Be interested in hearing the answer. So that's it. Thanks for joining in this evening. Glad you were along. Thanks for downloading the podcast, the archive. Thanks for being part of this little process. And to those of you who do support the Horn with your contributions, I sincerely thank you. All of us at the Horn, sincerely thank you. We wish that there were a whole lot more of you. Maybe someday there will be. In the meantime, many thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, on his way with a brand new, fresh, live, Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program. Coming up later this evening, probably a Horn section. Coming up later this evening, unless I hear otherwise, John Fox. We are, in a word, therefore, back to normal. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. He's got a fundraiser going on. He is in need of your help as well. Please remember that. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the people associated and affiliated with Coal River Mountain Watch, who partially sponsor all the programs here on the Horn. We are immensely grateful to them and immensely, immensely impressed and honored to be associated with them. You can join Coal River Mountain Watch. You can, in fact, be part of the solution. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.